are you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we are inching ourselves ever closer to the big 100.
Oh.
I never thought we'd get there.
No, I didn't.
No, not at all. We might still not.
We might still not. But I think as long as we keep having the supportive listener base that we currently have, I'm sure we will. And on that note, we want to start with a bit of a sad little tale. We didn't win at the British Podcast Awards.
fix.
The listener award went to Commode and Mayo, which I think is a good shout. I think they do an excellent podcast. But I personally just wanted to say thank you to all of our listeners who voted, because a lot did, didn't they?
Yeah, hell of a lot. And, you know, it's not all about winning. It's about taking part.
It kind of is.
It is. Yeah. I'm furious.
Commode and Mayo, we're coming for you next year.
God, we sound like Liverpool fans. Next year, it's our year.
Oh, the Man United fans sticking the knife in there.
I don't need to right now. They've had enough of a battering.
They have, haven't they? Shame. So what we got coming up on the show?
Well, our main review is Solo, A Star Wars Story, the latest movie of the Star Wars world. Is it going to be out of this world or out of Argos? We'll find out.
Out of Argos?
Argos, you're plugging already?
Well, Argos.
She was saying it as if it's a negative. Yeah. I like Argos.
It's good.
I buy a lot of my homewares from Argos.
As well, Ben always takes advantage of the fact that they deliver late at night on the same day.
Same day delivery from the fine people at Argos.
Argos.
So do Next.
Ooh.
We're really getting into it now.
It's made my day.
And Amazon Prime. Talking about Prime, our topic this time is our top three straight to DVD, not Amazon Prime, DVD titles. Okay. So you see what I've done there. Not Netflix or Prime. So
segment, like it.
Quite a big one there. We're going to discuss on that one because I think it'll give us a chance to discuss films we haven't in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of films we haven't discussed in the past, our rewatch is Eastern Promises, starring Viggo Mortensen and directed by David Cronenberg. I'm going to just be honest with you. It's one of my favourite films, and I'm going to be really upset if you don't love it. But we'll find that out later on in the show.
We're going to be movie masturbating over the king of running in scenes. Yes, Mr. Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And talking about Cruise.
Really? No.
Our new quiz is Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift, which does cruise through the night if you're driving fast.
That's the worst one.
He did hand actions as well.
But it's the second round, and I lost last week to Gemma, but it was quite a good fight. Listening back, we both did pretty well.
I did better.
But now it's myself as the games master, and Ben will be taking on Gemma, so that's going to be fun.
That's going to be a good one. And we'll also be giving away some great prizes. We'll be giving you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and all the other usual tasty treats that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. I want to get into it. How about you, dudes?
Big time.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
As you just heard on that incredible intro from the three of us, the topic this time round is top three straight-to-DVD films, and I do believe this will be a chance for Ben, myself and Gemma to talk about films that aren't Blade Runner, The Thing or The Shining, which is a good start for the listeners out
indeed.
There. And also it gives us a chance to talk about films that I don't think we've ever mentioned, but I might be wrong, and that's the good thing about Skip to the End. So I'm going to throw it straight to Ben to start the ball rolling.
I have taken advantage of a rather large loophole here.
Uh-oh. Blade Runner it is.
No. It went straight to DVD in Vietnam. No. All three of my picks did in fact have a very limited theatrical release in America. However, they were all straight to DVD in the UK.
So one of mine's,
I think that's fair.
One of mine's that as well, so that's all right.
So I'm going to lead off with 2007's The Condemned.
Oh, is that with old Stone Cold?
It is.
So I could have picked any number of straight to DVD films starring WWE wrestlers. I mean, Christ, how many Randy Orton movies are out there?
And Kane.
That one where Kane is having a wank. Do you remember that one?
It's true.
I should have picked that.
It is true.
See no evil.
Yeah.
Good movie. Should have won an Oscar.
When he finishes having a wank, does fire burst out of his bellends?
Gemma!
What?
That's disgusting.
Like his old entrance.
Oh, God.
Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, just the use of the word bellend. Yeah. That's got me. But anyway, can we get back on track?
Back to Stone Cold.
So this particular film stars Stone Cold alongside Vinnie Jones.
Yes.
Come on now.
That's a team of the fucking titans.
Exactly, exactly. And the film is a blatant rip-off of Battle Royale, but instead of school kids on an island, it's a bunch of convicts on an island who have to fight each other to the death. And Stone Cold plays a guy who's on death row, and he takes a place in the game to try and win his freedom. But then you later find out that he was wrongly accused. He's actually a special forces soldier and not the murderer they've made him out to be. And then eventually, after picking off all the competition on the island, it comes down to Stone Cold versus Vinnie Jones.
Ooh,
and if that
God.
Concept doesn't leave you rigid, then you shouldn't be watching movies.
I'm rigid right now.
I'm going to go and get a mop.
And clearly, this film is total bullshit. But it is great fun and, you know, because Steve Austin is a believable badass. He's been playing that role since 1996. So if you just want to plug someone into a film who's a scowling badass, get him. And I don't like to talk shit about him because he is my favourite wrestler of all time. But in this film, he portrays precisely one emotion, which is slightly miffed.
That's not totally miffed.
No.
Slightly.
Slightly or perhaps somewhat miffed. That's as far as it gets.
Hesitant miffed.
Yeah. But it's ridiculous. It's, Mark, you're fond of a term, beer and pizza movie. This to me is the archetypal beer and pizza movie. Put this on, have a beer, have a pizza, and just, you know, turn your brain off.
I think when it came out, Domino's ran a thing where you got it free with some certain pizzas that you ordered. It's that much of one. It is. Do you know what? I've never watched it, but I've seen the cover, and the cover itself, I was like, I want that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Anything with a WWE star that isn't one of their own films as well, they're even worse.
Yes.
Like Leprechaun, the remake or whatever.
With Hornswoggle.
Yeah. That's, sorry if I've ruined your choice there, Gemma. But WWE, if they sign up someone who's taken a bit of a break, especially Kane, you know it's going to be gold. I'm waiting for probably like Big Red in, what could it be? What could he?
Bridges of Madison County.
Hunt for Red October. That would be good.
Hunt for Big Red October.
Yeah,
that would be pretty good.
Well, you better have a wrestler in your choice, otherwise you're sacked.
Good job, I have.
No way.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's called Steve Austin.
Yeah!
It's called Damage. It was out in 2009. And it stars, you're not going to believe this, guys. He's an ex-con, right?
Sounds familiar.
Who fights in illegal, no-holds-barred matches to pay for an operation that will save a victim's daughter that he was currently in prison for. So he killed a guy.
Yeah.
He had a little girl. And now she's got heart problems. Her mother is giving Stone Cold the old guilt trip, like, well, you kind of killed my dad. And he's like, well, I don't care anymore, I'm out of jail. She's like, well, you're going to have to pay for her operation. So then he kind of gets a conscience and he does. So Walton Goggins steps in.
Oh, I love Walton Goggins.
Wow.
He steps in to kind of organise these fight matches. And I thought, there's no way this is going to be great. I love Walton Goggins, and I do love Stone Cold, but I thought they're not going to have good chemistry together. They have brilliant chemistry together. It's exceptional. And again, Stone Cold is so bloody likable as a guy who's just trying to get his life back on track after being incarcerated. But he packs a hell of a punch in these fight matches. His finishing move, unfortunately, is not a Stone Cold stunner.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
I love it when wrestlers do that in their movies. Yeah. I think The Rock did a Rock Bottom in like Welcome to the Jungle or something.
He did it in one of the Fast and Furious films as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
He rock bottom stay them through a table.
It's true. It's so true.
So instead, he punches people in the heart to finish off a match.
Oh.
But it's brilliant. The fight scenes are quite brutal. They're quite no holds barred. And it's an account to Stone Cold's testament to how athletic he really is, even though he's chugging beer a lot of the time. But trust and believe that gentlemen facing him stack it big time. And just, it's a fun film. You can just switch your brain off for an hour and 50 minutes. One of the longer straight-to-DVD films.
That's too long.
Too much commitment.
Mm. Yeah.
But I kind of secretly wanted a sequel to this. This is so good.
Never say never, to be honest.
Yeah.
These sort of films can have a 10-year gap before we get the next one.
Yeah, because they only need to rustle up about 400 quid to make
right?
one.
Easy.
I want to see this, though, if it's got Walton Goggins
in it. It's so good.
Unreal.
So good.
So I've not seen either of them so far. I feel like I've not even lived.
See, skip to the recommend already and we're not at the end of the show.
Amazing. My first choice is a horror from 2000 and I can't remember. It's like 2007 or Brilliant. 2009. It was put on the old rack for a couple of years like Donnie Darko and it's called Trick or Treat.
I've heard of this.
It's a really good horror. And
when you say Trick or Treat, are you like, is that like Toys R Us?
Yes, exactly like that. It's still too soon to talk about Toys R Us, dude. Yeah, it's too long.
R.I.P.
But it's like an anthology horror film with five different stories that all kind of intervene. So there's like a synergy.
It's like VHS.
A little bit, but better. The fact is as well, if any of you seen Creepshow, Stephen King?
No.
No, of course, boy, I'm asking Ben. What a waste of my breath. But it's a lot like that. Now, I can't sell this to Ben because it's really shit.
You had me
it's
at shit.
It's not scary. It is amazing because there's no CGI and it's good little stories. But the only way I think I can get Ben to watch it is the main star is Furman Merman, the kid from Bad Santa. Who's about 16 in it, and he still looks about 7, and he's still got his little pot belly and his little curly blonde hair, and he's amazing.
I thought he only did Bad Santa and Bad Santa 2. I have no idea he did other movies. Or Furman.
So if that doesn't get you to want to watch it, I don't know what will. But what does make me wonder when I was looking at this topic is how some films get made. Because this film obviously didn't get a cinema release, and people, if you read on IMDb, is between horror fans, it's scored very high. And when you get shite like Prom Night that goes to the cinema, and all these awful horrors where it's like Conjuring 3 and all this
Conjuring.
Wank. Conjuring. Conjuring. Conjuring.
And the Vinitone 2 films.
And how many horrors are there now that are based on things like Unfriended? Friend request. Every horror now has some sort of social media name.
Yeah.
Terrible.
It's coming soon. DM me. Friend request. Yeah, but it's a good film, and any horror fans out there that love sort of Stephen King and cheap feeling, good horror films, get it at Halloween. Gemma, you need to watch it. You'll love it. You'll absolutely adore it and enjoy it. Ben, never watch it.
I shan't.
Yeah, I don't need to tell you. But that's my first one.
Excellent stuff.
I'm going with a 2009 Woody Harrelson film called Defendor.
I've heard of
that. That sounds awesome.
I told you anything about it.
The name. Fuck me, it's awesome.
So as I say, it stars Woody Harrelson. He's a mentally challenged man who becomes a vigilante named Defendor. And it's very specific. If people call him Defender, he kicks off. It's Defendor with an O. And he does this to take on his imagined nemesis, Captain Industry. And it's a very, very dark comedy, but it's quite empathetic. Even though he is mentally challenged, you're never laughing at him, no matter how delusional he is. You're always kind of on his side. But he is delusional. For example, one of the weapons that he uses against gangsters is marbles. He will just throw a handful of marbles at people as if that's going to have any effect on them. It does nothing, but then he follows that up by beating them half to death with a club.
That sounds like what I'm going to be like when I'm like 50 years old.
What, just throw marbles at people?
Yeah, why not?
When the dementia sets in.
Be careful you don't lose them. Fuck it.
Wordplay.
Jesus.
Terrible. Terrible. I'm going home.
But it is a really interesting film, and it's a shame it didn't get a wider release anywhere, because it's a typically superb performance from Harrelson in a career full of him. He's always great, isn't he?
Always.
And we'll talk about that more when we get to Solo, I'm sure. And it also features really touching performances from Kat Dennings and a solid turn from Michael Kelly, who you might know from House of Cards. But the interesting thing to me is, I think the reason why maybe this didn't get as big a release is because I think there was a bit of fatigue around this time, because there was a handful of films about homemade DIY superheroes. In the space of 2 years, you had this, you had Super, starring Rainn Wilson, James Gunn film, which is fantastic, and Kick-Ass.
Bloody hell.
And they all came out, really, within the space of 18 months, 2 years. So I think people were kind of like, is that too many? And so some of them fell by the wayside. But this is a really interesting one. It's far darker than the other two I've just mentioned, and definitely worth a watch.
No crossovers is amazing.
So far.
I haven't seen any of them either. None of us have seen each other's films yet.
No.
Fucking hell. And we're having a DVD night at my house.
Excellent. I'm pretty sure none of you have seen this one. So my second choice, now I know there's going to be a bit of kickoff here. American Psycho 2, All American Girl.
Get out. You're
now,
sacked.
Now.
Turn the mic off, dude.
It's directed by Morgan J. Freeman. Not that one.
No.
Thankfully. But it stars Mila Kunis as a college student who will stop at nothing to become a college professor's assistant. Now, the tie with American Psycho is at the very start of the film, she witnesses Patrick Bateman kill her babysitter. So in turn, she kills him. It doesn't necessarily need to be in a film. So if you take that bit out of the film, this is actually quite a fun slasher film where we get to see the psyche of Mila Kunis's character just get darker and darker as the film goes on. So Yes, the connection is there, but this is a solid, like, late 90s, early 2000 horror flick. William Shatner's in it too. Being as William Shatner-ish as he could possibly be. It's just a fairly good film. It's not an amazing film. You're not going to be saying, like, this is sort of the top of my list for horror films. But Kunis is actually really convincing as this emotionless and sociopathic character. You really get to see her acting chops because I think she's very much typecasted in a lot of her roles, especially in TV. She's always the ditzy teenager or sort of the supportive friend. But she is dark. And she carries it really, really well. And it's a good Sunday hangover slasher-esque viewing with a good sort of early 2000s pop-punk soundtrack. Yeah. It's all right.
It's all right.
You know, it's made her top three.
But it's I liked right. it. It kept my attention for an hour and a half. And sometimes there's films where you just think, I'm just going to go over to Facebook and see who's dumped who.
Yeah.
But I didn't once. I was fully engrossed.
The bit that you mentioned there, where the connection to the original American Psycho, you said they could have pulled that out and you wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah.
I kind of think, if memory serves, I think that is what happened. I think this was a script that had nothing to do with American Psycho.
Nothing.
That was just going to be a standalone film. And they realised, oh shit, we can try and get a few more people to watch it if we manage to throw it into that universe. So I think that bit is tacked on to an existing script that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, didn't need to be.
Really fucking mercenary, that is.
Yep, didn't need to be, but it's just a fun film.
Christian Bale not in it?
Sadly not, no. Oh. It wasn't even the real Patrick Bateman.
Oh.
I know, it was like Ted Danson?
It was Ted Danson,
I couldn't think of any surname in the world. I was going to say
Ted
Bundy.
Smith?
I was going to say Bundy.
Ted Bundy, that
Ted
would be
Bundy either.
Fucking hell.
There's a film about Ted Bundy coming out soon.
My Friend Dahmer?
No, that'll be about Jeffrey Dahmer. You dipshit. The clue's in the name. The film about Ted Bundy stars Zac Efron.
Yes.
Coming out soon. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm up for that.
Mark doesn't know what we're talking about.
No.
Smile away, boys. Smile away.
I like the original Ted Bundy film. That's quite good. Have you seen it?
No. I think there's a few out there, to be honest.
Okay. It's called just Ted Bundy, I think. Mm. It's pretty, okay. Better than your choice, to be honest. It's pretty.
I beg to differ.
This is the first time I think we might have crossover. I think me and Ben might have the same choice here. I'm not sure. It's the first one. Tremors 2, Aftershocks.
Oh, it was four. It was number four for me. Just missed out.
1996 masterpiece.
Well.
I don't understand why, but Kevin Bacon had nothing to do with it this time round. He did his first one, and then he went off and did other stuff. You know, he's doing E! Adverts now, so you think to yourself, well, actually, you've probably missed out and you regret it. Fred Ward is in it. Michael Gross is in it. The two from the first one.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, Ben, your favourite characters.
Those big name.
Freddie W.
And they're having an absolute blast in this. The film is actually quite good fun. They're chewing up the scenery. You know they're not taking it seriously. But the quality's good. You know, when you watch a film that's normally like, if you watch like Lost Boys 3, for example, it looks nothing like the first one. I'm sure American Psycho 2, Cruel Intentions 2, it's a lot lower budget.
Yeah.
You could put this on in a cinema and no one would question it. It seems like the
same. But isn't that because the first one had a shit budget as well? It's just equally crap.
I'm trying not to ruin the story because, Ben, I know you've not seen this one yet. But this time round, these attacking killer worms that are underground go to Mexico. And the reason is that they ate the staff of a whole petrol station, so these guys need to come and tackle these worms. So they're going to this petrol station, all the staff are dead. What's happened? Who's done this? Is it someone that's come to mug them or take the petrol and do a runner? No. Those killer fucking worms are back.
I hope that bit, what you just said then, I hope that was a quote from the film. That was the police officer getting there. What's happened? Who's done this?
Have they gone off with the petrol again?
That sounds like Birdemic. But yes, this film is very good fun. If you want, again, another beer, another pizza, a Sunday hangover film, don't watch American Psycho 2.
Watch
Tremors
2. American Psycho 2.
Trust me, it's a great way to spend an hour and a half, and I bet you'll never watch it.
No, I haven't seen the first one.
But the first one will be a rewatch one day.
Oh, Christ.
So hold that veto card very safe.
Yeah, I've still never used my veto in 3 years.
You've got one as well.
Oh, I.
No, she got one.
She doesn't. She's an employee.
Fucker.
She doesn't get one.
Yeah.
Sorry. Don't say that.
Excuse me. Mark, kiss my piss.
Cemetery piss.
So Gemma's seen the final episode of Silicon Valley then?
Certainly have.
Kiss my piss.
Kiss my piss.
Brilliant. You need to watch Silicon Valley, do you? Get on it.
And finally, your third choice.
Now, this is the first one I think that we probably have all seen. And it's Boondock Saints.
Ooh. Amazing. I'm surprised this went straight to DVD.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Goodness.
It had a minuscule theatrical run in the US and then came out here straight to DVD. It's a film about two twins played by Sean Patrick Flannery and Norman Reedus, who you'll know more commonly as Daryl from The Walking Dead. They become vigilantes after getting in trouble with the Russian mob. It's one of those ultra-violent and self-consciously cool films that sprung up in the wake of Pulp Fiction. There was this thing in the late 90s and early 2000s, everyone was just trying to rip off Tarantino's style, unsurprisingly, because he did it so damn well. You know, it makes sense to try and thieve it, because he thieved a lot of his stuff, so, you know.
Why not?
Turnabout's fair play. But it was nowhere near as good as that, obviously. But it is a very... I was going to say it's a very good film.
I just remembered what the topic was.
That would be a straight up lie. It's a film not without its charms, let's put it that way. Willem Dafoe's great in it. He plays this weirdly theatrical cop. And then Billy Connolly's in it. Friendly Scottish comedian Billy Connolly plays this nut job hitman.
Of course.
And he's clearly having a blast because he's clearly never been asked to play this kind of role before. And he's having great fun. It's full of gratuitous slow motion gore, which I like.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Good bit of fun. Have you seen the film, actually? Now I've mentioned
years ago.
Yeah. It is one of them that pretty much everyone of our age group saw at university or at school prior to uni. Did you ever see the documentary that goes alongside it called Overnight?
No.
So the director of this film, Troy Duffy, he came out of nowhere. He was a barman and he had the idea for this script and he managed to sell it to Miramax, and then there were a lot of back and forth. It went to another company, etc. And he got some friends to film him all through this process of trying to get the film made. And it basically shows him going from rags to riches and back to rags again, because he's absolute human garbage. He's one of the worst human beings you'll ever come across. And this video shows how much of a twat he is. And it's entirely his fault that this film didn't get a wider release, because he's such an egotistical arsehole, because he sold this film and he just started pissing all over his friends and thinking, yeah, fuck you, I'm a big star now.
Ugh.
So this documentary, Overnight, is actually better than Boondock Saints.
I need to watch this.
I want to watch both.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Yeah, it's definitely worth doing. But I think there was a sequel as well to Boondock Saints. Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day.
Oh.
Which I imagine that's a good movie.
We need a whole weekend. We get the boys down and we need just annual welcome to join show. And we'll just watch all this shit.
Yeah. Why not?
Because we need it.
Unnecessary sequels.
Clear that palette and then, you know.
Yeah.
I'm
absolutely
up for it. I still can't believe that. I saw it come through on social media and I just thought, nah, they've got that wrong. You know when someone on social
media,
nah. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Because it's been huge on DVD. Video and DVD sales. Because it was only out in the cinema for a few weeks in America, it didn't make its budget back, obviously. But over the years, it's become a cult hit. We could have easily picked it in last week's topic.
Yeah.
And it's made a shitload of money since. But this Troy Duffy dick, in his contract, he didn't request that he would get a cut of the profits from video sales.
No.
So he's made nothing off it.
Good.
Good. What was that? Turned into the penguin.
That's because I am. So my last choice, I've gone for a horror. And it's The Curse of Chucky.
Oh, nice.
It's so good.
Very good film.
It's directed by Don Mancini, who wrote the story for the original Child's Play movie and the other Chucky films that was following up from it. And it's the first film in the series to be directed to video.
Yeah.
So all the others got cinematic releases, but this was the only one that didn't. Can't think why. So basically, it revolves about a lady called Nika. She's in a wheelchair. And she finds her mother dead one day in this great big mansion that they live in. And it coincides with the timing of a mysterious package of a red-haired doll.
Not Ed Sheeran.
No. Or Mick Hucknall, believe it or not.
I'm trying to think of another famous redhead.
You?
Famous. Prince Harry. Stick together, boys.
Of course, it's Chucky. I know. I spoiled it already. So, following on from the appearance of this doll, the lady in the wheelchair brings her family over for a bit of a get-together to remember their mum, and mysterious deaths start happening. And yes, Chucky's back. And it's voiced by the original guy, Brad Dourif, who was Billy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
And he actually appears in it as Charles. Sorry there. Marked up there.
Fuck you.
And it's actually an origin story. So we actually get to see how Charles embodied himself into the doll of Chucky and why this lady in the wheelchair's family had something to do with it. It's all quite sort of full circle, very synergized, if you will. But again, this is fun. It's gory. You know what you expect with a Chucky film. It's scary. They use a cute little kid to kind of strike the fear into you, but it's fun. You know, and it's a nice actual little way of rounding off the whole Chucky story, the Child's Play story. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Haven't they left it open, though?
Yeah, they have.
So how new is this one?
2013.
Oh, this is very new then.
Mm.
I think I've only ever seen one Chucky film. Was it Bride of Chucky?
Oh, is that the one with Jennifer Tilly?
Yes, I've seen that one.
She makes a little cameo in it too.
I actually quite like that film. I thought it was all right.
Tiffany.
Seed of Chucky that follows that when you have a baby. That's good.
Oh, okay.
There's been another one as well since, I'm sure. What's your choice?
Curse of Chucky.
I think there's another one as well.
Really?
It's just come out.
Oh my God, I need to watch those.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
I like the Chucky films.
They're fun. They're fun. When I was a little kid, it used to scare the absolute shit out of me.
Yeah.
But now, watching back as a year-old person, it's actually quite... There's a bit of humour into it.
Do you know what's absolutely amazing? You used to be able to buy Child's Play dolls, Chucky dolls, that were battery-powered. But all that it did is every now and again the eyes would move.
Oh my God!
So it would do it would do literally nothing for hours or days, and then out of nowhere the eyes would move.
I need to get me.
How fucking terrifying is that? Because you could buy it for someone, not tell them that it was battery powered, and they'd flip the fuck out.
Let's do it.
I'm down for this.
Well, sticking with horror, my final choice, and I know you've seen this, Gemma, The Final Girls.
Oh!
I've seen it.
Have you both seen
it? I've seen it. Yeah.
Yes.
I really liked it. Yeah.
Good. And I'm going to use Ben's card of it. It didn't come out on cinema release in the UK, it went straight to DVD here, so that's my way of getting out of
it. Great choice.
It's a really good combo of horror and comedy, which sometimes they don't get right. When you see these films like I Know What You Did Last Summer, and there's just too much humour, and there's another one is like Urban Legend, you know, have all these films.
Yeah.
But this one only came out a few years ago, and it's a bit trippy because this girl goes, basically, her mom's died, so she goes to the famous site where it happened and kind of gets sucked into this film. So she's actually on set, reliving, like, Groundhog Day, this same scene of a film, getting away from this maniac killer. And that killer, for me, seems like a genuine threat. I think the humour and the horror elements work very well. And we talked about Kane in See No Evil. It does actually generally remind me of him. He's a real stacked-up guy, with long hair. He's walking out. He hasn't got flames coming out of his knob.
Shame.
But he's walking around looking like a general threat. But anyone that likes Friday the 13th or, you know, is it Sleepaway Camp, the old horror films, this, for me, is up there with them. It's done bloody well.
I really liked it because I remember reading a lot of good reviews about it. So I managed to get hold of a copy and I was really impressed with it. I thought it was a good bit of fun.
Yeah.
There's some good people in it. I think Malin Ackerman's in it. Yeah. She was really good.
I couldn't announce her name.
Tysa Farmiga. Yeah, she's
I've got
good.
These wrote down. I wasn't going to try and say that.
It's a good job we've seen that, isn't it?
But it is, and it's genuinely funny, and they're not annoying the kids, and I think it's again a really good excuse just to sit at home, switch your brain off, and be entertained.
Yeah.
Really good film. Oh, good. We did see finally something all on the I'm surprised you've seen it, dude.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you enjoyed it.
I did.
What did the good old social media come up with this time?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We're going to go to Twitter first. Sam Inglis at 24FPSUK.
Too long, that.
Yeah. I know, it sounds like a cry for help. The Final Girls.
Good choice.
Yep.
Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning.
Nah,
I want to see that.
That sounds like a sequel. And Jess and Moss.
What now?
Never heard of it.
I don't know what that is. Patrick Saxon at Patrick the Yeti said Dragon Eyes.
We're not going to know after these, are we?
I don't know why. I'm even leaving a pause. Undisputed 2 and 3.
The third one's not as good. Lost its merit there.
I know. And Trick or Treat.
Good choice.
There we go. Mr. Hand at Philip Hand 2 said Indianapolis Men of Courage.
So great film.
Old Nicky Cage.
Did you know that that film, Ben's still angry about this?
I feel like
if
I've
you buy the
DVD
or the Blu-ray, on the back it's got skip to the end and 4 stars because I reviewed it and bent in there. No,
I was I was fucking furious. He sent me a screenshot of it, like, look at this, man, we're on a DVD cover here. And I was like, you've told this company that this piece of shit straight to DVD Nicolas Cage film is 4 out of fucking 5. It's like, we don't even do things out of 5, we do it out of 10. And me and Gemma haven't seen this. I was like, you never do that again.
Do you remember what scored Red Sparrow?
And then it got on the YouTube trailer for the film. And I was like, I need to hide that from Ben. And then when the DVD came out in the shops, your brother found it and sent him a screenshot in Asda. Yeah. And I was like, I really wanted to hide that from him. Sorry, dude.
Oh, dear. Well, this guy's got two more options. He's
got
Dead Snow.
That's a good film.
I'm sure you've talked about that
before. Nazi zombies in a mountain.
Yep.
And Big Ass Spider. I don't know what that's about.
God knows.
Can't guess.
No. Paul at Zombie Dead 1981 said Class of Nukem High.
Great film. Got it on Arrow's DVD set. It's really good.
Turbo Kid.
Amazing
film. Straight to DVD?
I didn't know that.
Was.
It probably is over here.
Mm. Oh, well, it's on the list, right?
Yep.
And The Boondock Saints.
Yep.
So I guess if he's put that, we can give him Turbo Kid. Then onto Facebook, Mike Hood said Tragedy Girls, Highlander Endgame.
Amazing.
And Theodore Rex.
That sounds amazing.
It does. Danny Sava said, one in the chamber, Blood and Bone, and anything with Steven Seagal in it purely for the comical value.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll give him
that. That's like so 900 much. Films.
Very true.
So many.
And then finally to Instagram, John Applewhite at John O. Apple said, Cop Car with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that's a great film.
I've not seen it, but it's meant to be quite
good. It's really good, yeah. Dude. It's better than Tremors.
Rewatch. Wolf Creek 2 and Snowpiercer.
Could we have had that?
Now, I wasn't too sure if we could because I was very particular with our choices.
Yeah,
but
I think it's a tricky one because it didn't get a theatrical release over here, but I don't think it even got a DVD release. I don't think there was any.
Sadly
I think it just went. We got it on Netflix for a brief period in the UK, but that's since gone.
Yeah.
Damn. That's all right then. At least I don't feel too bad. No.
And also, we have talked about it a lot, which is why I didn't bring it.
So you can have that at John O'Apple.
Cool. So whose topic choice is it next?
It's my choice. So when you think about the future, you think rosy cheeks, sunny days and happy times. But I'm not going to look at that kind of future. On the next episode, we're going to come up with our top three dystopian movies.
Amazing. Ben's just come.
If you come with us, you're in this life for good.
Been to see Solo, a Star Wars story, directed by Ron Howard and starring Alden Ehrenreich, Woody Harrelson, Emilia Clarke and Donald Glover to name but a few. In a galaxy far, far away and a long time ago, we meet Han Solo, a plucky young pilot who is ready for adventure for a little bit of money. After escaping his oppressive life, Solo sets himself into a dark criminal underworld where he meets new friends, an old flame and a path to his destiny amongst the stars. Now, we're going to be spoiling this film a lot in this review. If you've yet to see it and you do want to go and catch it, skip to the end of this segment, come back, we'll be waiting, and then you can hear our thoughts. But for the time being, we're going to tell you ours now. Mark, I want to throw this to you first. Solo or no go?
When I went into this film, my expectations were low.
Yeah.
Some would say they were so low,
it was
unbearably low. I absolutely loved it. I left the cinema feeling like this is the Star Wars film we've wanted for probably the last decade. As much as I love, what's it called, episode 7?
Force Awakens.
The last film we had of Star Wars left such a bad taste in my mouth. The Last Jedi is the biggest pile of shite I've seen. And when I watch it again at home, it actually goes further in the wound.
Yeah, it's worse. When you see it again, it's worse.
Oh, yeah. Testify.
This, for me, didn't have ridiculous amounts of CGI. It was a simple story. It was only 2 hours. Everyone acted great, and I came out of the cinema feeling like I'd seen a Star Wars film, like the originals, and I felt like a kid again. It ticked all the boxes that I wanted, so maybe I should just go and watch every film now with the worst low expectations ever, because I fucking enjoyed it.
Marvellous stuff.
Sorry about swearing, it didn't need it there. It wasn't justified.
Hey, you were in the moment, it's fine. Ben, your thoughts?
There was no reason for it to exist. It added absolutely nothing to the Star Wars universe. It was pure fan service, and I fucking loved it.
Yeah!
It was magnificent. There's not a lot of substance to it. It's very lightweight, but it's zippy, it's fun, it never lags, and I did not stop smiling.
Yay! Go on, ruin it.
Who am I kidding? I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish. I had a great big Daffy grin throughout the whole film. There's little moments that nod to the predecessors of the previous films, which are non-offensive. The jokes did not feel forced like The Last Jedi did.
Forced.
And everyone was great, especially a particular character that I'll probably jizz over in the next few moments.
We'll come to that shortly.
So just to echo what Mark said, When I was in the cinema with Gemma watching this the other day, and you know that the BBFC screen comes up that shows you the rating and the film name. As it came up, Solo, a Star Wars story, it dawned on me that it's the first time in my life going to see a Star Wars film where I had no excitement whatsoever.
Wow.
We could have been going to see anything. It just didn't feel like anything. It didn't feel like an event. They always feel like an
event.
Yes. And this didn't. It was just going to see another film on a Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as Marcus said, I think that's why I was so open to enjoying it, because I didn't have any built-up notions, any built-up expectations. I was able to go into it with a pure mind, And I just thought it was fun. This is the word I'm going to say probably half a dozen times throughout the next 20 minutes. It's fun, which the last Star Wars film, Last Jedi, was not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were entertained throughout the whole film. It felt like your attention was always grabbed. It never lagged.
No.
Never lagged. Whereas The Last Jedi, we did find ourselves hoping for a bit of action, a bit of chemistry between characters. But the chemistry between every single character in this film was electric. And props go to Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo, because it didn't feel like it was a tribute Harrison Ford act.
No.
This kid made it his own. He wasn't trying to emulate someone else. He took the character as a young Han Solo, and he succeeded, in my opinion.
And the thing is, everything was against him because he had been tarnished with, oh, he needed coaches on set. They had had 3 different directors sacked and all this. New writers joined the team. Everything was going against it. And he was the one concern for me. When I got in the cinema, I thought, he has got big shoes to fill. The moment he came on screen, he didn't annoy me. Yeah. He wasn't arrogant. He didn't piss me off. I thought he might have that effect like the main actor in Baby Driver, Ben. You know, that guy that annoys you. What's his name?
Oh, Ansel Elgort.
Yes, yeah. I thought he might have that effect. I thought I might be like Ben sitting here now and I just can't enjoy it because of him.
Yeah.
But he was the opposite.
Yeah.
He had the right cockiness of Han Solo that you'd get from Harrison Ford, but it was never too much. And it wasn't all about him. Even though the film is all about him, we actually don't see it in the actual film itself. We get so much more. We get different characters. And I've said it at the start, we didn't have all these stupid over-the-top battles of CGI. We didn't have all these lightsaber stuff. We just had a good, simple story that carried itself. And every time I looked on set, it felt like if I then watched Empire Strikes Back or anything else, it would have fitted. Where when I watched now Last Jedi, all this stuff about Rey being repeated and all this in this mirror thing and all this telepathic, all this crap that she had with Kylo and all that, it's all wank. In this, they got rid of everything that didn't work in The Last Jedi. We didn't have a green tip being milked suddenly, which would have made it a lot better. But we didn't have any of the stupidness. We didn't have any of the jokes where he throws a lightsaber over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. None of that. Cut it back. Keep it simple like they did with A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back and Jedi. This can sit nicely with those original trilogy and it will fucking work and sit right. When I'm sat on a Sunday, I want this to be part of my collection now when I'm watching a Star Wars day. I'll lose the prequels. I'll lose episode 8. But I will keep this one and Rogue One in that pile.
Yeah, and going back to Alden Ehrenreich, I agree with you. At first I was watching him, and he wasn't Han Solo to me. He was just a different character. But once he started to interact with Chewie and interact with, you know, and get on the Millennium Falcon, I was then like, yeah, I am watching Han. This is a young Han Solo. And he has got charisma. He doesn't have 1970s Harrison Ford charisma, but then who the fuck does?
Yeah.
You can't expect that of him. You can't put that on him. But I thought he was great. And something you've mentioned there is the chemistry that he had with other characters. So let's start with Lando. His back and forth with Donald Glover playing Lando Calrissian I thought was fantastic. I thought, I don't think there's a better bit of casting you could have done than getting Donald Glover as Lando.
Yeah, my favourite character throughout the whole film. He is a smooth motherfucker. He's just, he oozes charisma every time you see him on the screen. He's just smooth as butter. He's so cool and so self-assured and charming, but at the same time, he's only out for number one and L3 the robot. He was just perfect. I'm so glad that we got to see Donald Glover. I mean, now he's going to be all around the world. People are going to know him even more than they do now, thanks to This Is America. But give him his own movie.
You know, they've either got to give him a Lando spin-off, but at the very least, I think we're going to see him in... Because there's going to be sequels to this now.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the ending a little bit later on, but they've clearly set up sequels, and I think we've got to see more of him.
I hope so. I really hope so.
You've left me nothing to talk about Lando, apart from he was just amazing.
Yeah, a good cape collection.
Yes, very much so. And I liked him playing his card game. He was always that... A bit of a rogue, you know, he had it under his sleeve, and I liked the way that he was so sure of himself, but even he knew that when he met... Han Solo himself, if anyone was going to do him over, it was him. So I'm so glad he kind of did get done over and we saw Han as the hero.
Yeah, and Gemma then mentioned his relationship with the droid L3. What did you think of L3, Mark?
Annoying.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm really glad that we only got about 10 minutes because it was just like, we're putting this character in to help everyone in the world agree that we need a feminine robot, we need this, we need that. And it's kind of... doing it for the wrong reasons. And I think that Star Wars at times can be quite sexist because people have always moaned that in the early films we didn't get enough of female characters, even though we had Leia and stuff. I think they've just done this because we've had R2-D2, we've had CP3O, we've had all the male kind of robots. Even in Rogue One we had a new one. I think they've just done it to keep people happy. I got annoyed.
Oh, I don't think Gemma's happy with that.
I liked
Gemma.
That's my opinion.
I liked L3. I thought L3 was quite charming. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who voiced her, did a really great job. She's quite sassy. It kind of actually gave the film a little bit more comic relief, because the film wasn't joke, 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 joke. She kind of interjected with a few funny moments here and there. But for her to die and actually become part of the Millennium Falcon, I think was deserved. She needed to be just that presence of helping out the guys in turmoil.
I must say, I actually quite liked her. I enjoyed L3. Mm. My problem with it, the thing that annoyed me, though, is that the Star Wars films have now decided that there has to be a C-3PO in every film. So if you've not got C-3PO, Rogue One brought in that annoying robot played by Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
And now this film has brought in another annoying robot played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's like, we don't have to have a quirky droid in every Star Wars film. You can come up with other ideas. That's what annoyed me, even though I actually enjoyed this particular version.
Which brings me to the very end of the film. Now, I know we've still got bits to talk about, but I feel like as we're talking about this, I need to talk about the surprise cameo at the end of the film.
Mate.
You're going there already?
I'm going in, both hands in. Darth motherfucking Maul.
Fucking A.
I know. I do wish at this point, so I didn't get to see it with these guys this week due to whatever it was, annoying. And I just wish I'd been there for Ben, because I just would have known, because he's one of your favourite Star Wars characters.
Absolutely.
Ever.
He's the only good thing about Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I literally did. I threw up the devil horns. When he came on, I just threw up the horns, because that was like the coolest thing that happened in the film.
And how nice was it that we didn't know before we went in?
Yeah, yes. No clue.
And he looked amazing.
He looked incredible.
And he even got the lightsaber just before he went off shot. Mm-hmm. We saw it, zhing, and yeah. I was like, oh, my semi's back.
And it was played by Ray Park, the original Darth Maul from The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, although it wasn't voiced by Peter Serafinowicz, who did it in Phantom Menace.
That's a bloody shame.
It was voiced by Sam Witwer, who has done the voice for Darth Maul in the Clone Wars TV series. So
okay.
It's still all connected. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's going to be a big, big player in the future Solo films.
I hope so.
Because apparently Alden Ehrenreich and the other main cast have signed on for a trilogy.
Wow.
Which is fantastic, because I want
more. I'm well up
for it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do we think of the villain in this? What do we think about Paul Bettany? Because I really liked him. I think Paul Bettany is just cool as fuck anyway. I've always loved the dude. And in real life, he always comes across as a really great guy, but he plays threatening villains with ease. He can be really sinister. And one of the things I loved about his character is, whenever he got angrier, the scars on his face started to glow. They got deeper and redder, and I thought that was a really nice touch.
I didn't think that. I thought that I was the only one that noticed that. Yeah. I thought that was really good. I also liked the way how he presented his tone of voice. Now, I know that's a really weird thing to pick up on, but he was so articulate in the way that how he spoke, and he had this real strong British accent because, you know, to pop belief all Brits are villains.
Yeah.
He really presented himself really, really well, and it was threatening. He felt like a danger to the group. You didn't know which way he was going to go with his plan of attack. And of course, when he busted out that old switchblade with the slight lightsaber
that
nest
was cool.
To it,
I like that.
That was really cool. It wasn't what we were used to with a long lightsaber coming at you. But I felt like it made it more deadly, because mm-hmm. he was shockingly bad, like terrifying.
He's my favourite thing in the whole film.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. My first note I took down was that I loved him, because he didn't like ham it up. He didn't go over the top, but he felt like a threat. And I remember one of the lines where he simply said, I never ask a second time.
Yeah.
And that alone was like, oh my God. It's just such a simple concept, but it's true. And I'm like, yeah, don't make him ask. And I always felt like he was a genuine villain. Like, we've talked about DC and Marvel films where villains are hard to cast, apart from Thanos recently. But Star Wars, when you think of the villains in the last few films, they've not been that great. I like Adam Driver a lot, but he's carried the film. If without him, there would have been nothing.
Yeah.
When we saw Snoke, my God, like, he was just looked
Snoke?
Like a
nope.
Yeah, he just looked like a foreskin, and he just
like
died
melted,
so quickly.
Like,
but in this film, he made up for all the shit villains we've had before.
Yeah,
I loved him, and we didn't have any flying, running around horses that are mixed with guinea pigs. We had none of this casino. They never put any of that in. They didn't shoehorn stuff just to make us feel like an old film.
No, they didn't. And they had a few action set pieces, which I thought were particularly good. I thought the set piece of the guys doing the heist on that train, the rotating train.
That was
thing,
amazing.
I thought
Brilliant.
That looked unreal. That was beautifully shot. And then also the set piece when the Millennium Falcon is trying to escape the gravity well thing, and there's
my
that big
favorite.
Space creature.
That was my favourite.
I thought they were directed wonderfully.
Mm-hmm. The whole special effects too. It didn't feel like it was too digital. It didn't feel like it was too fake. The way how the colours melded with those lightning pieces in the clouds was gorgeous.
We haven't talked about a character for me that I fell in love with watching this film, and I've never been a massive fan of her previously. Not because she's, I don't know, I just didn't imagine her in a Star Wars film, but Emilia Clarke is gorgeous.
Yep.
absolutely unbelievable. And when I first saw her on screen, I thought, please like her, because I sometimes get a bit wound up when I see people that are in like Game of Thrones and stuff, and it doesn't work. So I associate them as being in Game of Thrones, and it doesn't work. It's like, you should only be in that for the rest of your life. Breaking Bad, you stay in that. You never break character. You're always going to be Walt. I hate it when they try and mix now back into film. So quit.
Actors should only ever do one role as long as they live.
That's it. That's how
Stifler, hello, typecasting.
That's how Stifler gets by.
And he loves Stifler.
But Emilia Clarke was amazing. She was so elegant and so well-spoken and so beautiful. And even at times you thought, she's too good for him. Why would she be interested? But because he's such a rogue, because he's such a little villain and a little bad boy, she attracted to it.
Yeah.
And I love that she went back to him. It wasn't a case of like she went for a better life. She saw what the money was like, the better lifestyle. She still wanted that bit of Solo. Beautiful.
I remember Terminator Genesis.
Ugh. Oh, God.
You're the only one.
Why do you bring that up?
Because she wasn't right. She wasn't right.
That film didn't happen.
Yeah. But I felt I could believe Emilia Clarke a lot more as Kira in this. I suppose she related to the character a lot more, and therefore that made it believable for us as viewers to watch. She wasn't trying to be Khaleesi either.
No.
She wasn't trying to be Mother of Dragons, Breaker of Chains. She was being Kira, and Kira fucking rocked.
She was amazing, and she was... You used a good point there, that she wasn't like Daenerys in Game of Thrones, because Daenerys is very stiff and very prim and proper. She was a lot more relaxed, more sort of sensual, but she was also a badass. She could also do those kind of martial arts and beat the shit out of people, and she was very self-possessed.
Yes.
You know, I thought she was absolutely brilliant, and I love the fact that she didn't just go away with Han at the end of the film. She was like, no, fuck this, I'm going to take my shot. And she flew off in that yacht thing. Again, like we've said about everyone in this film, I'm looking forward to seeing more of her in a sequel. Yeah. Fantastic.
There is a character I wish we got to see more of, and that was Val.
Killed off too soon.
Definitely.
Tandy Newton.
She was incredible in this. She looked amazing. Her character was really... I wanted to learn more about her character, but for her to sacrifice herself, I was gutted. I understand why she did it. So therefore, I can't be too mad at the filmmakers for doing that, but I wish we had more of a backstory with Val.
I just wish they'd have hired a less well-known actress then. If you're going to have someone who's going to bite it within a few minutes, don't get someone who's having a real career, you know, renaissance at the moment, because she's amazing in Westworld, especially in season two.
Clearly.
I've not watched the last two episodes.
Oh my God, really?
I'm waiting.
Get
now.
On it, they're the best two.
Oh my God, it's so good.
One of my favourite parts of the whole film is the fact that we got the origin, we got the friendship building, and we saw where Chewbacca came from.
Yeah.
And we always thought, I'm sure all of us thought the same, that's pretty much how he came into life and got into the world of Star Wars. But to see him without his belt and his kind of gear and this messed up monster that basically was ready to eat and kill Han was amazing.
Yeah.
And I love him, and I love the way that they were communicating straight away. It wasn't like we had to learn this language and build it up. They were basically in each other's arms, helping each other from the moment they met, and I loved it.
Yeah, I thought the dynamic between them was wonderful. The fact that he could speak Wookiee, I thought that was really cool. And their little gambit to escape from the prison. Again, I just want to see more of him. I think the only character we've really not mentioned is Woody Harrelson, isn't it?
Beckett is the
mentor character, and he was great.
He was, and again, he's had a bit of a renaissance, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's been off... I mean, I'll always remember him as, you know, if anyone should break character, White Man Can't Jump is the film he should stay as forever. But the fact that we got him in Zombieland and we were like, yes, he's great, and then he went away for a bit. We didn't see him for a while, and now he's back again, and he should be in everything, because True Detective was the moment I thought... shit, this guy can act, because he's up there with Matthew McConaughey and he's nailing every scene. Mm-hmm. He's not being completely overshadowed by one of the best actors in the business. And in this film, he was, for me, probably one of the best, like, believable characters. I didn't think, oh God, that guy's going to try and score a slam dunk in a minute at any point. I generally thought he was a good guy. And I love the fact that we kind of got a big show. We got him turn face, we turned heel, and then he turned face again. But I didn't care. I loved it.
Yeah, I thought he was great. He just had that feeling of an old rogue. It helps you understand how Han becomes the Han we see in A New Hope if he was around a guy like that.
Yeah, the wariness. Yeah. He's seen things, man. He's seen it all.
But the thing is, you're now saying that you see this old rogue and you can see he's got the experience. That's what I wanted when I saw Del Toro in the last film, The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And I never got that feeling. Yeah, yeah. And in this film, they did it right. Yeah. They went, oh, that didn't kind of work. We just threw him in for no reason. In this, they did it right.
Do you feel like they've learned from the mistakes of The Last Jedi?
No, because they think it's good.
That's true.
It's, you know, half the world thinks it's terrible, half the world thinks it's amazing, and the makers of it are in the amazing camp. So I don't think they've learnt a damn thing.
No.
And this is getting worse reviews across the board. You know, the critics are saying that this is worse than Last Jedi.
What?
It's not bombing, but it's nowhere doing as well at the cinema in America as they thought it was going to. I think they thought it was going to do 150 million in the first weekend, and it's looking like it's going to do 120, something like that. So it's a disappointment. But for me, it's a better film.
Yeah, agreed.
I went yesterday afternoon. There was about 10 people in the cinema.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's a nice sunny day. They had big events taking place like the Champions League. But it is not going to do well. It might jeopardise the fact we might not get the sequels.
No,
you never know.
It will make money. It will make profit. So there's no reason why they wouldn't do more. It just won't hit the levels of profit that they're used to.
No. Mm-hmm.
Because they've got a very high bar when it comes to Star Wars films. Before we move on, let's just talk a little bit about Ron Howard. So Ron Howard was brought in as a pinch hitter, really, because the first two directors were dismissed. How do we think he did? Me personally, I think he did a solid job. Solid but unspectacular, I would say, which sums up his career for me.
I feel he was very reliable. You knew what you were getting. I mean, fans of Apollo 13, mm-hmm. fans of his other work, it was what it was. He delivered. It's not anything life-changing. He's not, you know, pulled a Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be nominated for an Oscar in the future, but he gave the results. And I think he did it well.
Yeah, and I respect him for not doing what Johnson did in the last one and trying new things.
Mm.
If there's a formula to make a good Star Wars film, keep a good story, make it simple, characters you love, and try and use practical effects.
Yeah.
That's what ticks the box for me.
I thought the practical effects in this film were fantastic, to the point where a lot of the characters reminded me more of the Fifth Element.
Yeah!
I got a real Fifth Element vibe. But yeah, I thought he was great. The only thing I thought was maybe a bit lacking in the direction was some of the close quarters, hand-to-hand fight scenes. I don't think were very interesting. They weren't visually dynamic. They were a bit of a letdown, I think. The bigger scenes, like we've mentioned, the train heist and so on, they were great. But the close quarters fighting, I think, was just a bit choppy, not particularly well done. But otherwise, he's a safe pair of hands.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm very happy. I could have been very frustrated on this review and very let down again after 6 months of seeing The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But I'm happy and I want to see it again as soon as possible.
Ditto.
Delightful. I think it's good as time to start wrapping this up and giving it a score.
Yeah.
Mark, is this going to be one of your films of the year?
Piss off.
Kiss my piss.
It is damn good. It's not as good as A Quiet Place for me, but I still think it's very enjoyable and I can't wait to own it. It's one of those films I love Star Wars at home at Christmas. That's when I feel like a real good Star Wars moment.
Yeah.
That's why I loved Episode 7 so much. For me, it's a strong high 8 out of 10. And I think that's very fair and respectful. Respected. Respectful?
Respectful.
Respectful. There we go.
Respectable, I think is the word you're
We got there in the end.
Ben, are you giving it a respectable score?
Well, it's definitely a fan service film, isn't it? Han meeting Lando, Han doing the Kessel Run, winning the Falcon, all that kind of stuff. But I'm a fan, so it worked on me. A lot of the recent Star Wars films, especially Last Jedi and Rogue One, have been really bleak. So it was nice to see one that was light-hearted and fun. I loved it. 8 out of 10.
And I'm going to echo exactly what you both by saying I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. You guys have said what I've wanted to say. So, all in all, Solo, A Star Wars Story, gets a skip to the end. 8 out of 10.
It's Corey Tishon time!
Obsessed.
If you listened to our last episode, you'd have heard that most of the questions we put out there for the competitions were Corey-related.
Weren't they all? Not just most.
Yes.
All were Corey Feldman-based.
And it was a lot of fun, and I felt it was time that the listeners out there to get these incredible prizes had to work for it. Because sometimes it's just stuff like, what score did we give a film? Well, you're listening to the episode anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We need you to work harder. And in return, we'll work harder. Win-win for everyone.
You sound like such a manager.
Exactly. So the first question we put out there, because it was our Deadpool 2 episode, was to win some Deadpool Funkos, which was an exclusive Deadpool who's lying down, looking quite sexual, Cable, which is a really cool Funko, and Domino as a set. And what we did, we said, what character does Corey Feldman play in the film Lost Boys? Really simple question. So Ben?
As everybody knows, it's Edgar Frog.
It is. Well done. And Rory Simon Wilson on email will be getting that bundle in the post.
Well
so
done,
massive,
Rory.
Massive well done. Secondly, as it's Deadpool, we had the Deadpool the Duck exclusive Funko. Now, these are a bit more rare, so I felt people needed to work even harder. The question I put out there was, in the 1990 film Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Corey Feldman provides the voice for which turtle? So, Gemma?
It's a no-brainer. It's Donatello.
It is. Now, Todd Murgatroyd has won that via email. I can't get it wrong because he's emailed, so I will be emailing back to get your details, but it looks like it's Murgatroyd, so that's a great surname. Who knows? God, we gave loads away. The third competition was to win a show dogs bundle, which consisted of a varsity hoodie for your dog, some aviator glasses for your dog, a dog bandana, charm bracelet, a little beast pet pritz, a soap bar, and a paw balm. You don't want this band? You want to keep it? We'll give it away?
Yeah, well, let's give it away. I won't have any use for it.
Former child actor is Corey Feldman's third album.
Masterpiece.
Indeed.
He provided a cover of a John Lennon song only for the first 2,000 copies, which probably sold like that.
Well, I bought 1,900
of them. Yeah, you did well. It's amazing though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which cover, which people have said is better, did he cover of John Lennon?
It was Imagine.
It was. Barking Mad About Films is going to win this because his picture, when he uploaded the entry, had his little dog. And I thought, if anyone should win this, it should be someone with a dog.
Yes.
So you rightfully deserve that prize. Last Let Six of Nowhere have come up. They are bloody good, aren't they? They've given us some good t-shirts over
they
the time.
Are.
And they're not stopping. So they've given us a Sister Margaret's School for Wayward Girls in conjunction with Deadpool. Nicely done. On Corey Feldman's 2016 masterpiece double album, Angelic to the Core.
Oh, yes.
There is a track called Seamless. And it is seamless. It's absolutely phenomenal. But he had some support from a vocalist from a band called Limp Bizkit. What was the singer used from Limp Bizkit?
That would be Mr. Fred Durst.
It is. Bit more oomph, please. Who was it?
That was Fred Durst, motherfucker!
Freddie D!
That's much better. At Quizmaster Flash, we'll be getting that in the post. That's a great t-shirt. A couple more prizes we had for our cult films. In conjunction with that, we had an Evil Dead t-shirt, which is arguably one of the best. But there's a film that's better, Meatballs 4.
Obviously.
That's the one. But Ben, you know, you get wound up with me this all the time.
Yeah.
It's Meatballs 4 to the rescue. You hate it when I just say Meatballs.
Yeah, exactly. Say the full name.
Yeah.
You know, they've put their work in to come up with the full title and you don't use it. Disrespectful.
It is annoying. Corey provided the leading role in this film, but what was the character that he plays?
And if you don't know this, you can't say that you're a true member of the Feld fam. It's obviously Ricky Wade.
It is. And Simon Armstrong got that right. So he's going to get that t-shirt in the post. And I want to see pictures of all these prizes. And finally, this is the big one. Richard Sounds gave us a Panasonic Blu-ray 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray player.
Crikey.
Who is that a lot of letters?
This is a big question. Really easy, though. Who officiated the wedding between Corey and his second wife, Susie? Here's a clue, Gemma, but I'm sure you know it anyway. He's a famous MC.
I already know it, Mark, and thank you for verifying that. It's MC Hammer, of course.
It is, and I'm sure she's a massive Corey file. Beth Rowett on email will be getting that in the post.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be sensible this week. We're not having any more rubbish, because it is fun, isn't it? But I also want to respect the listeners. So this time, you'll be pleased to know, every single competition question in line will go within what we're discussing. So it's not stupid stuff like that. So as we're doing Solo, Star Wars story, which is we've just reviewed, Funko have come along and given us a full set of the Funko Pops for this film, and they're very cool. The Solo one itself looks ace, but you get Chewbacca, you get all the other characters we've discussed. Let's keep it in line with Solo, okay? What was the first song from Corey Feldman's solo album, Former Child Actor? That's fair.
Yeah, it is.
I've kept it in line.
Yeah.
Solo
very,
album.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next up, as well, Last Exit to Nowhere have got some very cool designs for their t-shirts, and they've got the Millennium Falcon quad screen, which is beautiful.
Awesome.
And that's one of the favourite t-shirts of mine. I'd buy that straight away.
Cool.
Ascension Millennium is a track from which Corey Feldman double album?
Easy.
Easy.
It's the best one.
They've also got another Star Wars t-shirt that simply says, "Fly me to the moon," and it glows in the dark. Very, very cool Star Wars print.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Flying Away is a track by Corey Feldman, but on which album does it appear?
You gotta try harder with these questions. These are too easy.
I know.
We're gonna have too many entries.
Jeez.
Your email inbox will be full.
I'm thinking of changing up because Richer Sounds have come along and they've gone one step bigger. They're giving us a sound bar for a TV.
Ooh.
Can I have one?
By JBL. Let's change it, okay? What is JBL's real name in WWE? How's that?
Okay.
Changing it up a bit.
Yeah.
Nice.
And finally, we're going to give all the Funkos away, plus two exclusive bobbleheads from Star Wars for an iTunes rating. How's that?
Very good.
So I've being more sensible this week. You're seeing that completely
completely makes sense.
Ish.
And what we'll do, because I've seen this come through on social media, all you have to do is email us. You have to tweet us. You have to Facebook us your answer. And the way you can do that is to go on skiptothend.co.uk, and on there, all the links are there. All the email addresses, everything you need. And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks and announce all the winners for these fantastic prizes.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite performance from an actor or an actress we pick out from the pot. On the last episode, we picked out the man who loves to run, Mr. Tom Cruise. Don't know why I did it in that voice, but it felt natural. So we're going to be talking about our favourite performances from Mr. Cruise. So Ben, I want to throw it to you first. Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise, fave performance, go.
It can only be Frank T.J. Mackey in Magnolia.
Amazing.
It's just a phenomenal performance. If you're not familiar with the film, then, you know, go buy it, download it, do what you need to do, because it's an amazing movie. He plays a motivational speaker who teaches men how to pick up women. And he initially seems like this irredeemable piece of shit, but we later see there's more to him. And I'm going to get into the specifics in a minute, but just generally speaking, this film is a reminder that he used to be a real actor who got Oscar nominations. This was his third of three Oscar nominations after Jerry Maguire and Born on the 4th of July. These days he just does action movies, and many of them are very good. I'm a huge fan of the Mission Impossible franchise, but he's basically a little flea now. All he does is he just runs and jumps. That's all he does. But back in the day he used to emote, you know, acting, the basics of acting. And this was the pinnacle of that for me. He's not really in the film all that much. He's probably in maybe... You could probably count on one hand the amount of scenes he's in. And when I think of this performance, I think of three scenes in particular. The first is of him giving his pickup artist motivational speech. He comes out onto the stage to the music Thus Spake Zarathustra, like Ric Flair, which is amazing. And the first words out of his mouth are, "Respect the cock!" And he's prowling around the stage like a cross between a panther and Mick Jagger. It's absolutely phenomenal. And then the second scene is he's just finished his motivational speech and he's on a high, he's pumped up, and he's doing this interview with this kind of cynical journalist, and he's walking around his dressing room in his pants. He's wearing these little tighty whities, little budgie smugglers, and he's so hype, and he's doing like backflips and shit, and it's just a brilliant piece of physical acting. And then the third and final scene that really seals this for me, it's when you realise there's more to him than this douchebag. It's when he goes to see his dying father, Earl, and he's sat by his bedside and he's saying, you know, "I'm not going to let you do this to me. I'm not going to cry. I've always said I won't cry over you." And then he breaks down into these floods of tears, these heaving sobs. And it's just a masterful piece of acting. Every little thing he does in this film, each of those three scenes I've discussed are completely different shades of that character, different colours entirely, and each one of them, he nails it, absolutely nails it. The whole movie is just this raw, animalistic performance. He's like an exposed nerve all the way through, and it's untouchable.
We need to get Magnolia on the rewatch list.
Yeah, it's
we
on my list.
We really do. It's so good.
It'll happen very soon, just for that reason. Everything that Paul Thomas Anderson does mostly is get the best performance out of actors that don't normally shine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If anyone can get anything from Tom Cruise, it was him. And to see those two work together, this whole film's absolutely magical. I fucking love it. We really do need to pick it very soon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my God, Tom Cruise is so unbearable and so disgusting on there, isn't he? He's such an egomaniac.
Oh, he's vile.
But I love him.
Yeah.
I absolutely love him.
Because that's the thing, when you see him doing these motivational speeches, you're thinking, this guy's a douche. How can I ever relate to this guy? And it's when you see him breaking down with his father, you're like, fucking hell, he's human after all. It's an amazing performance. And the shame of it is, I was watching Magnolia again the other day, and I got to thinking, wouldn't it be great to see him work with Paul Thomas Anderson again?
Oh my God, yes.
It ain't going to happen though, is it? Because Paul Thomas Anderson did the film The Master, which was a veiled dig at Scientology. So I don't think old Tomo is going to be working with him again anytime soon.
There's strong rumours, isn't there, that he's working with Tarantino in his next film? There's been links.
He hasn't been announced as the formal member of the cast, but that would be great, wouldn't
it? I'd love to see that. Yeah. If anyone else can get good stuff from him.
Hell yeah.
Just no running. Sick of running.
And no falling out of planes or helicopters. No. Every film now.
Just do like a brisk walk, perhaps. You know, be like us.
But I'm very, very excited for the next Mission Impossible film. It looks
way too good.
Better than it should. It, like, the trailer, the cinematography, I think we said when we saw it, looks way too good for an MI film.
And the last two are spectacular.
Yeah.
I love the MI series.
That'll be a skip trip, I think.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait.
Go on, Mark, your turn.
I'm not sure if either of you have seen this film, so I'm going to test the water. Vanilla Sky?
I have seen it.
Oh, great. So he plays David in this, which for me was the first film I saw where he wasn't running. And we joke, but it's true. He doesn't do much in this. I think there's one scene when he's running down the street, but it's none of this whole first person, you know, like a game.
Yeah.
He's a man that has everything he's ever wanted, and it's because his dad was such a successful businessman. He's left 51% of the business, so he's fed the silver spoon. And again, Ben, like you just said in your character, he's self-indulgent, he's arrogant, he's very materialistic, he's an egomaniac on all sorts of levels. When he walks in a room, he wants everyone to drop at his feet. Mm. He turns up late to his business meetings in his dad's name. He's not a good guy to like.
Yeah.
But I love his character in this because we see this man who has everything he's ever wanted lose it all in one moment of a car crash. And the reason the car crash happens is this guy meets Cameron Diaz, and Cameron Diaz is a bit obsessive, and we see at this party when Jason Lee introduces her, she instantly likes him, but also there's Penelope Cruz, who's gorgeous, and we can see this guy going through, I've got this girl upstairs who's very much into me, but she's not giving me everything I want, and I want this girl who I'm not meant to have. Cameron Diaz's character is freaky. She gets to the point where she's like, I will make you suffer. I can see you're falling in love in front of me, you arsehole, with some new girl that's only just been introduced to you by Jason Lee's character. So the ultimate revenge is they're going down the road, and she makes him crash. The next scene we see is his face mangled to pieces. Now, if your face is mangled and you're up for murder, who do you want by your side? Dad. You have got Kurt Russell as your guide there, the doctor himself. You've seen him standing there helping him. And this is when we see Tom Cruise act. He's got a mask on. We can't see his face. He's like, it's probably a bit like, what's the guy who's playing Venom?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy spends his life acting in a mask. And he does, but he's got this message of like, he's learning the lesson of, it doesn't matter about all the stuff I've got. I'm here now in this position and I need to get out of it. And it smacks you hard in the face watching it, because you're like, I really want to be this guy. He's got the best lifestyle, all this money, and now he's got nothing.
Yeah.
And the amount of heartache, and I feel for him. I feel for this guy so badly watching him. I watched it again this week and I sat there just going, I really feel for you. And in no other film, look at The Mummy, look at fucking every other film he's done recently.
The Mummy.
He's crossing it with the Babadook.
There's no emotion that I want to feel for Tom Cruise apart from just get this film out of the way. This is a waste. He used to act.
Yep.
And my God, Magnolia and Vanilla Sky are perfect examples of why the guy should have a renaissance of doing serious roles. Because Matthew McConaughey did it. He did chick flick after chick flick, and then he did serious films. Vanilla Sky, one of Cameron Crowe's best films. And it was set on a bloody remake, Open Your Eyes, which is a Spanish film.
Starring Penelope Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's bloody well done. Do you agree, or you kind of like, I hate it? Because I've read a lot of reviews where people slag it off.
I don't love the film, but I love the performance. I think he's excellent in it.
Brilliant.
It's a real mind bender, that film, but he is great.
I love the fact that it was left open as well. It really was. It was kind of one of those like inceptions where you can think about yourself, which Cameron Crowe shouldn't be doing films like that. It's out of his territory. He likes the whole nice romantic John Hughes films, but when I was researching this, I'm sure you agreed, he's done a lot of good films. It wasn't an easy wank. It wasn't. It wasn't,
brilliant.
Was it?
No, but they're all older, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not recent.
Yeah.
Well, as much as I love the Mission Impossible films, when we're talking about real acting performances, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, this leads nicely onto my choice. I've gone for Charlie Babbitt in Rain Man.
Great choice.
Oh, lovely film.
Because whenever people do think of Tom Cruise, they think of him legging it down an alleyway and just, you know, like leaping like a freaking gazelle. But for me, when he is given the opportunity to really act, this is where he makes the magic on the screen. So Rain Man is really, it's Dustin Hoffman's film. He plays Raymond, a man who has autism, and Charlie's just discovered that Raymond is his brother. He's been left a shitload of money, so he goes over and meets him. And it's really a road trip movie because he kind of takes him away from this institution that he's been in for a majority of his life and just goes on a bit of a journey and gets to know him a lot better than he ever used to. So when we're first introduced to Charlie, he's very cocky. He's really self-assured. All he cares about is making money and banging women. That's his ethos in life. And when he's first introduced to Raymond, he doesn't really have a sense of caring. He's not really somebody who's very empathetic towards people, apart from getting money and banging chicks. However, as the film develops, we see this shift of heart from Tom Cruise out of nowhere. And it's the scene where he's in the bathroom with Raymond, and Raymond starts saying, Rain Man, Rain Man. That's what you used to call me as a kid. This little memory that Charlie didn't think in a million years this would ever get unearthed, it really moves him in a place, and you see this utter change in his face, his demeanour, and throughout the film onwards, you see a softer side of him. You see this side of Charlie that even he wasn't aware that existed. It's such a beautiful and moving point of acting from Cruise. And another scene, when Raymond starts having a bit of a freak out, he puts some toast in a toast machine, it starts smoking
toast
up.
Toast machine.
Toaster.
A toast machine. Yeah.
Put the kettle on. What? You know, the water
the boiler.
The water boiler.
You can get them from Argos.
You can. Delivered the same day if you want it before 3 o'clock.
And next. But Raymond starts having a freak out. So Charlie comes and tries to calm him down. And it's at that point Charlie realises that there really is no future with them two together in the same house. It breaks your heart every time. But he still has a sense of dignity towards what he does. Is a beautiful sweetness. It's a really astounding film. Of course, Dustin Hoffman got all the plaudits.
Yeah.
Cruise was really a supporting actor. But again, what I really like about this MMD, none of us went for the action role.
Yes. Yeah.
And I watched a heck of a lot of action films with Cruise in. But this is the one that kept me drawn over to it.
The interesting thing is that all three of our picks, we've talked about him being cocky.
Yeah.
He's a cocky prick in all three of these films. And it's a colour that works well on him because he's an incredibly handsome man, well put together. He has that, you know, billion-dollar smile.
Yes.
So he plays that cocky arsehole well for someone who's 3'6".
It was between that and Top Gun. I think Top Gun's a great film.
I was going to go Cocktail.
Oh.
Because that's a fun film.
Yeah, it is.
So what's social media come up with? Because there's so much to choose from.
Yeah, we've had loads. On Twitter, Mossbird, at Mossbird, has said, because he's in a formidable ensemble and still shines, because he plays so far against type, because you truly feel his heartbreak in his final scene, and because he doesn't bloody run, it has to be respect the cock, Frank, TJ Mackey, and Magnolia.
Superb.
Owen Bruce Lee on Twitter, at Mr. Mojo Rising, said, Collateral, he's ice cold in it, really goes all out as the villain. Vincent is one scary guy.
I love that film.
I've so still good. Never seen it.
Have
know.
You not?
No. It's worth a watch.
It's unreal.
It's crazy.
You'd love it.
That. Yeah. On Facebook, Carmel Murphy, once you wade through all the Jack Reachers and Missions Impossible, you remember that this guy can actually act. So many good performances, but my favourite is Rain Man.
Aww.
Lovely.
Olivia at Livy Woodworth on Twitter said, Vanilla Sky. I've really only ever seen Tom Cruise in the Mission Impossible movies, so this was definitely a character I didn't expect from him. Plus, I can never unsee that mask he wears in the movie.
Mm.
It's freaky, that mask.
It's horrible.
Chilling.
Justin M. Strawn at Justin M. Strawn has said, Edge of Tomorrow is a really underrated movie, and the way he and Emily Blunt interacted completely made the movie. He's had many more well-known roles, but I thought he was best in this.
I've never seen it.
I still haven't.
Oh, it's such a fun
film. I've heard it's
great. At the start of the film, he's a real weasel. He's quite scared about things, but as the film develops, he's a lot more stronger. It's a great, great movie. Beer and pizza.
Yeah. I need to. I've read the book on which it's based. It's a Japanese novel. I really need to get into that.
And Emily Blunt is amazing.
On Instagram, Sarah Jane, a.k.a. RockChick_SJ, has said, to quote my favourite Cruise character, it doesn't matter what I believe, it only matters what I can prove. Which is Lieutenant Daniel Caffey from A Few Good Men.
Oh, that's a great film.
Absolute powerhouse performance, she says. Katie at Out of Tyne has said, I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan, hashtag sorry not sorry. So I found this very difficult, but I'm going with Jerry Maguire.
That is such a great film.
Oh, it's soft as hell, though, isn't it? Other than Show Me the Money, that film really
annoys me.
He
acts well, though.
He does. Get Into Cinema at CinemaGetta said, Maverick in Top Gun, not even a debate here, it's probably my favourite film, certainly one of my most watched. Far and away my favourite Tom Cruise performance, I even went to an 80s fancy dress party as him, and he posted a photo to prove it.
I was just about to say, prove it with a photo.
He did.
Good,
yeah.
I'll check it out.
Look it up. On Facebook, Jim Radford has said, Les Grossman from Tropic Thunder, he deserves his own film, and he's quoted, fuck your own face!
That's hilarious.
I love that. We've talked about it before, how it was kind of a shame that it leaked that he was in it, because they were trying to keep it secret and it'd be a surprise for people who saw the film. But he's hilarious in that.
Yeah.
On Twitter again, that girl at Pochin has said, maybe controversial, but I would have to say Interview with the Vampire. So many people, me included, thought Tom Cruise was totally wrong for the role, but he totally owned it. Camp, comedic and threatening all in one go. A little bit of Liberace and a little bit of Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. Okay, that's an odd combo. I'll take your word for it. And then finally, on Facebook, James Greenland said, I loved his performance when the lady from Balls of Steel squirted water in his face with a prank microphone. His portrayal that day of an epic tit was of Oscar-winning proportions. Yeah, do you remember that?
Did
you watch
Balls
of Steel?
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
He stormed off, didn't he?
He did,
got
yeah.
a right little
That's
paddy.
That's a well good show.
Yeah.
Fancy
good.
A bum? Remember that guy, that security guy?
Yeah.
Well good.
That was a fun show.
Aww.
Talking about fancy and a bum,
Don't know what it has to do with anything.
No.
We need to masturbate again. So whose turn is it? Is it you, Gemma?
It's mine. I'm very excited. There's not many names left.
There are only three names in the pot, so...
Can I have a drum roll, please?
Yeah, you can. Here we go.
Sorry. Let's go for that one. Daddy!
Yes! Kurt Russell, baby!
Yes!
Our rewatch this time round is Eastern Promises, a film from 2007, directed by David Cronenberg, from a script by Steve Knight. In the film, a London midwife named Anna becomes entangled with the Russian mafia after delivering the baby of a 14-year-old prostitute who dies in childbirth. Anna attempts to involve the police, but is warned off by a mafia henchman named Nikolai, who just might be more than he seems. Now, as I kind of mentioned at the start of the show... I really, really love this film, and generally I'm fine with us having differing opinions on films, but if you don't both love this, then the podcast is over. I'm done, I'm out.
Imagine that, not getting to 98
even. Yeah, bending it off after 97. So this film, of course, stars Viggo Mortensen as Nikolai and Naomi Watts as Anna, along with various other people. It's quite a big cast, actually, but I want to throw it over to Mark first, because it's one that I've been going on about to Mark for years. I wanted him to watch it. So, Mark, what are your instant thoughts on Eastern Promises?
It took my breath away, dude. It churned my stomach.
Yeah?
Like, I think Evil Dead was one of the first ones to make my stomach feel that, oh, Christ! Mm. And left me with... Just, my mind was blown because... Viggo Mortensen, is that how you say it?
Mortensen.
Yeah. So close.
It's fucking incredible. Yeah. Him and Cronenberg together are a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
And we had it for A History of Violence, mm-hmm. and I loved it. This doesn't top it for me, but it's tapping on the door.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal, dude. And just, it's so frustrating that he's not doing more.
Yeah.
Because this film showed me that he can be the bad guy, he can do an accent well, he can fucking act his heart out, and we don't see him anymore. We see him in, what, Lord of the Rings and stuff now? I can't remember anything he's done.
He doesn't do a lot.
No.
He doesn't do that much, which is a shame, because he is one of the best.
So I'm very grateful you brought it, and I think it is a masterpiece. It's so fucking well done. It deserves every award there was at that year.
Excellent. Gemma, I'm going to throw it to you now. Don't ruin it.
No, I won't. Don't worry. I like this one. It's a harsh and barbaric and very, very difficult watch. It's very uncomfortable in places, but as I echo my thoughts from a previous rewatch of A History of Violence, this is art. This is incredibly artistic. The violence never feels like it's just there just to fill in a bit of time. It feels purposeful. The acting is impeccable. The casting is spot on. And it does leave you with images that stay ingrained in your memory for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Word of warning, don't eat sausages whilst you're watching this.
Or do and enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I don't know, unless you like the sweet, sweet taste of chopped fingers.
Ooh.
But everything about this is high art. There's a particular scene which I've fallen in love with because of the choreography, but we'll come to that later. But this is wonderful.
Well, I'm so glad you both said that, because obviously I echo that. And let's talk about the violence then. Right away, from the very start, we get some classic Cronenberg unflinching violence. So we open up on a barber shop. There's an old barber cutting a guy's hair who's sat in the chair. This guy, a Chechen mafia guy, is, you know, running his mouth. And then this little lad comes in, gets handed basically a switchblade, and slices open his throat. And as I say, it's unflinching. Cronenberg never cuts away in those moments. He's happy to show it. So you see this gigantic gash open up in this guy's neck and blood just pissing out of it. And it's so visceral. And from minute one, you're like, yep, this is a Cronenberg film. I know what I'm getting.
Yeah, and it's done so, so well. I've talked about this on the last one. Tarantino would have blood spraying.
Yeah.
Most directors, like Spielberg and stuff, would pull the camera away so it's in your mind, and it depends on how fucked up you are. To see it not even spray blood, but to pour naturally and the open gash instantly makes you feel uncomfortable. Mm. It makes you feel like that's how it would be if that happened to me. And that's something that he does. He doesn't get all involved in sci-fi and all these robotics. He keeps it simple. If someone slashes your throat, Mark, it's going to look like that.
Mm.
And that's hard to watch, dude. And I was 2:12 into the film at this point thinking, Ben, is this going to get any nicer than this, or is this the tone for the next 2 hours?
And it's an important distinction where you've mentioned Tarantino there, because Tarantino uses it, he likes gore, he likes that kind of stuff to draw in the kids, basically. It's like, yeah, look at this, how cool is this? That's why he has blood spraying, arterial splay, like pss, 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 everywhere, because it's to look cool. Whereas Cronenberg doesn't do it to look cool. As you've said, he makes it look real, and he keeps the camera locked on that shot. It's as if to say, if you're watching this film, if you're with us on this ride, you need to accept what's happening in front of you. This is not for your jollies, this is not for your thrills. This is a dark, dirty, twisted story, and this is what would happen if it was real, so keep watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. He's forcing the viewer to be complicit in the act rather than cheering the act.
Yep, and we echo this throughout the whole film. It sets the tone completely. And that's not... I don't even think that's the goriest scene, and that is saying something. Mm. That's really saying something. I mean, even with things like dismemberment of bodies, again, that is unflinching. You see the full-on savageness of what it looks like when a dead man's fingers are chopped off with pliers or whatever, like garden shears,
yeah,
aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
You hear the crunch.
It's not nice.
It's not nice at all, is it?
And let's bring that to Viggo Mortensen then, because he's the guy doing the chopping.
Yeah.
He's cutting this guy's fingers off. And what does he look like when he's doing it?
Oh, he looks like he's just reading the Sunday papers.
Yeah, he's so unfazed. He's so cold and stoic. You know, he's got a fag dangling out of his mouth. You know, he could have been pruning some roses. You know, you said they're shears. He could have been pruning roses rather than cutting someone's pinky off.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he just seems, it's... He seems like he doesn't care. We will later find out, as we'll discuss, that he absolutely does care, but he has to present himself in a certain way, and he just comes across like he doesn't give two shits.
Yeah, I really like the character development of Nikolai. You think that he's this bad villain throughout the whole film, and you kind of want to find something good about him, even when he's in that brothel house, when he's asked by his mate, Kirill, when he's saying, you have to fuck one of these girls right now, because he doesn't want to come across as someone who would not want to take that opportunity. And even then, you know he's obviously trying to protect these girls, but he still does it, and he does it in the most raw way, whilst Kirill's watching him, and he's just like an animal. So you, all kind of sympathy or thinking that he might be a good guy is taken away from that moment. And you're really on the fence throughout the whole film with Nikolai.
And then that plays into the big twist ending. Mark, did you see the twist coming?
I'm not going to even pretend I'm intelligent enough. No, I didn't.
No.
It blew me.
So it turns out that he's... It blew you.
It blew my mind.
It blew you away. Turned into Tobias. Yeah. Tobias here.
Who wants a banger in the mouth?
Yeah, so it turns out that he's not just this mafia don. He's actually working with the FSB, which is the modern-day version of the KGB, and he's undercover, effectively. And you don't find this out until something like, what, 15 minutes from the end of the film?
Yeah, and I never saw that coming. I'm sorry, I'm still sitting here right now picturing his dick. I've got to go to this because I'm scared you're going to go past this scene.
Yeah.
You didn't warn me that we're going to see him fighting, getting himself slashed up to pieces.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, with his knob out the whole time.
No, so I said to you, one of the things I love about this film is that it has, in my opinion, the greatest fight scene in history. What I didn't warn you was that he was completely Billy Bollocks during said... So he's in like a Turkish bathhouse, and then two Chechen thugs attack him, and he manages to kill them both dead with a linoleum knife, which is a hard word to say. And yes, he's Starkers all the way through, so his little dick's wiggling in the breeze.
You see the peen.
You see his bumhole at one point as well. I tell you what, talk about unflinching, you see it all.
That's brave though, because he's being completely thrown over these like benches, aren't they, that he's going over, and you're thinking that they're going to pull the camera away, but not many actors would agree to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you slash me up, I'll have my knob out, and you can see my little cinnamon ring. That's a lot.
Yeah, very brave.
Yeah.
But isn't it absolutely visceral and brutal, that fight scene?
And that's my favourite scene I was referring to in the introduction.
Yeah.
The choreography is so meticulous. It's not just a full-on barroom brawl or a Turkish bathroom brawl. It is just so precise. Everything is in its place where it needs to be. The slashes feel like you feel that pain as soon as he's getting slashed up. But even when he's killing those two bad guys, the knife at the back of that guy's head.
Yeah, and he slams the head down. Oh,
jeez!
You just mentioned the cinematography. I think the whole film looks brilliant.
It does.
And he needs a lot of credit. London looks... so depressing and dull and drab and horrible and just gritty.
Yeah.
And he did a good job.
Especially when you have that sad violin Russian-esque kind of score that's going all across the scenes too.
Mm.
It has this real, what's the best way? This real sort of downbeat feel to it, where you feel like the weight of Tatiana's story. And when she's echoing her journal entries throughout the whole film, that music just emphasises it too.
Yeah, the whole film is put together brilliantly, the visuals and the sound. Just going back to the fight scene momentarily, it's not done in a one shot, it's not one long cut, but there are very few cuts. If you watch it again, you'll notice, I'm not going to hazard a guess at a number, but there aren't many, which demonstrates how well this has been choreographed. It's amazing, isn't it? There's so many different elements to it, because he thinks he's sort of killed one of them, then he starts fighting with the other one, goes over that bench like Mark mentioned, then he comes back, stabs the guy in the eye, which is fucking nasty.
Again, you see it all.
Yeah.
I saw everything.
He didn't.
Everything.
And,
it's gross.
It's isn't it just one of the best fight scenes you've ever seen?
It's impeccable.
It is, but I had to see a lot of knob.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind.
No.
It was all right.
Yeah. I didn't mind.
Shame it wasn't Ryan Gosling for you, eh?
I know. Oh, he would have been all over that pain.
I'd have bought the 4K and paused it and just...
I thought you were going to say I would have bought the foreskin.
Oh, that's gross. But everything, it's a very dark film in the way it looks. Like, every time they go into one of the restaurants, the lights are all very dimmed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At times I thought, is my contrast right on my TV? Genuinely, because it's very dark and gloomy. And I do believe the cinematographer for this is fantastic. I think it's one of the best out there. And to make London look so shit isn't hard, but he's done it well and with respect. And I think he deserves awards.
Yeah, South East London just does look like that most of the time, I think. Dingy hellhole. No offence.
One thing as well, which is we talked about Red Sparrow. In this film, I feel that they all nailed the accents. I think the Russian stuff to do is not easy, and sometimes it can be comical. But credit to every single person in the film. They nailed it. Not one stood out like, oh, he's not really nailing this. I thought they all did it justice.
Yeah, I did too, especially because they were all... of all the actors in the film, I think you had Americans, French people, I think one of them is Israeli, but they all did what seemed to my ears as pretty good Russian accents.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of those other characters then. Gemma's mentioned Kirill, who's kind of the prince of the Russian mob, and he's a drunken lout.
Oh, just a bit, jeez.
And then it's up to Nikolai, Viggo Mortensen's character, to look after him. I absolutely love Kirill. I think it's a wonderful performance by Vincent Cassel.
Vincent Cassel has that villain look about him. Mm. I don't think he's ever played a good guy or a hero.
Because you wouldn't believe him if he did, because he's got a prick face.
Exactly. I'd think, what's your agenda about this, eh? He was mean in Black Swan, but
that's what he's in. I was thinking, yes.
So he was mean in that. And he's not exactly a hero. He's not exactly a good guy, but you can't help but feel a little bit sorry for him, especially with the big twist of the revelation of Tatiana's attackers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we learn that it was his dad who's the top boy in the Russian mafia in London, who was the one who raped her and got her pregnant, essentially. Yeah. And that pregnancy is what brings in the character of Anna. Naomi Watts' character. What do you think to her?
I love her. I love her for her stuff that she's done with David Lynch. And we don't see enough of her again. Yeah. And in this, she kind of she leaves her pride at home, doesn't she, when she goes to do that job. It's not an easy role to play. And I think on set, you know that's not an easy part to play. I don't think anyone could pull it off. It damages your career doing some of these films. Working with David Cronenberg, I think, is dangerous because he makes you do stuff. The violent portrayals, the sex scenes and stuff are raw.
I think it worked. Yeah, she was one of the characters that was spared of almost like degradation and humiliation throughout the whole film.
She's still involved. The agent's still going, I've read the script. This isn't ideal for your career, babe.
But I think that she was still that guiding light throughout the whole film. She was a beacon of positivity because all she wanted was the best for baby Christina and to carry on a bit of Tatiana's legacy by making sure that whoever did her wrong was brought to justice. And she achieved it.
One of my favourite touches in the film is towards the end, after we found out that Nikolai is in fact an FSB agent, he doesn't reveal that to Anna, because it's clear that him and Anna, there's something between them. You know, they share a kiss at the end of the film. And he could quite easily, when she says to him, why are you helping us? He could quite easily say, keep it under your hat, but I'm actually an undercover agent. Yeah. But he doesn't. He said, I'm just doing it to get him out the way so, you know, I can be the new boss, which is bullshit, obviously, but he's keeping up his cover story. And he so easily could have not done that. And I think that's a great little story beat, because it means there is no happy ending for these two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how many directors would have done the whole, guess what, don't tell anyone, and they have another kiss. Oh, you're doing this all for me? Yeah, walk off to the sunset.
Exactly, that's the easy Hollywood ending, isn't it?
He'll do anything but the nice endings.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to see more of his work, because obviously we know his like real old horror stuff that he did that's really like gory
like
as well. Yeah.
Yeah,
stuff like that. But I want to see more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's absolutely brilliant. I just want to keep bringing this back to Nikolai, because I think it is Viggo Mortensen's greatest performance. It was rightly nominated for an Oscar. And there's something he does in it, which is, it's going to be difficult to describe on air because it's a visual thing, but it's when he's dealing with Anna's uncle. And the uncle pisses him off and basically he threatens him by doing this symbol. He jams two fingers to his throat like that. Does this little symbol thing and then points at him as if to say, you know, give me any more lip and I'm going to slice your throat or stab you in the neck.
I'm going to put two fingers up your throat.
Just that little thing, just that little action. It's like, that is so threatening. That is more threatening than any number of words he could have said. And it's, again, just a brilliant little bit of acting from
You've
Viggo
done it
Mortensen.
Five times while you've sat here, and I'm a bit intimidated.
That was just me giving you the V's.
Yeah. Fucking hell. It is, though. It's good.
Yeah. But how great is Mortensen in this film, though?
I agree. It's his best. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen enough of him. That's my problem. I've gone Lord of the Rings, this, History of Violence. I can't remember what else he's really been in. History of Violence was the... Do you know what? History of Violence for me is a better film overall. I enjoyed it more. Yeah. I enjoy the sex on the stairs scene a lot.
But, of course he does. Course
but... Not just because of seeing the sausage in this, but for seeing him and how much he gave to this performance, it is his best. If we did a masturbate, this would be the top choice.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree that History of Violence is a slightly better film than this, but I think this is a better performance from him, absolutely. And that it's all capped off at the end. So once everything's gone down, the big mafia don has been taken in for statutory rape because the police find out that he knocked up this underage prostitute. He's then essentially top boy, or one of the two top boys in the mafia. And the final scene of the film is him sat in that Russian restaurant in the dark, virtually in the dark, as Mark says, and there's that just look on his face of world weariness because he's had to do a lot of evil shit. He's a good guy. He's a cop. He's a Russian cop, effectively, and he's murdered people, dismembered people, and he's going to have to keep doing it because he's now in this top position in the Russian mafia. And that look on his face is just gut-wrenching, isn't it?
It's haunting.
Yeah.
And I love a good ambiguous ending where you really don't know what's going to happen next for that particular character, but you can only assume it's probably going to end in death.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to end up getting killed, getting assassinated, getting his throat slit. I genuinely can't see any happiness for Nikolai and Anna as a team, as a cohesive unit together. I think Anna, she's going to grow up with Christina. They're going to have a wonderful life. But I do think a year down the line, Nikolai will be within that Thames River along with the other bodies he's disposed of.
Quite possibly.
I'm thinking we do top three bleak endings at some point or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is definitely one of them.
The script entirely is very bleak and very dark, so it didn't surprise me when I found out it was written by Stephen Knight, who created Peaky Blinders.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, so you can definitely see a touch of that in
now
here.
Now I see it, and I've not seen any Peaky Blinders.
You should get involved, man. It's a great show.
You have to.
And this is a great script. One interesting thing that I wanted to throw at you is, for a film that is as violent as this, as we've discussed, there are no guns.
That's very true.
Shit, you're
think
right.
of that. Think of that. There's
all
no gun
knives.
Violence. It's Jeez. All knives. Everyone gets stabbed or slashed with knives and razor blades.
Bloody hell.
Because you're so used to films of this type, seeing people getting shot in the head, shot in the gut, all that kind of stuff. None of that. All knife crime, which again sums up London.
They bloody love their knives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Londoners in general.
And if you're going to buy good knives, go to Argos.
Yeah, that's where I get it from. Or if I wanted to get a linoleum knife like those Chechen rebels do, I would get it from Wilkinson's.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How much are they? Probably about 54p.
Oh, probably that. Yeah.
They do good pick and mix as well.
That's true.
Very good.
There we
At that point,
where do we go from
Pick a Mix and Eastern Promises.
Let's score it, shall we? Mark, as I went to you first, I'm going to go to you first for the score.
It's all eights today, dude. I think we've banged them out. So it's another strong eight. I absolutely loved it. It was my first viewing, so I can never go too high. Mm. I will watch it again. I kind of want to watch it back to back with History of Violence.
Yeah,
I think it'll be nice. Be nice, not the word at all. Just be entertaining.
It'd be lovely.
It'd be really nice. Get a picnic blanket out. But no, a high 8 out of 10.
Okay, Gemma.
Yeah, it's a high 8 out of 10 for me too. It's not as good as A History of Violence, but I love how Cronenberg uses art and violence together to make it more meaningful.
I think you guys, if you see it again, I think it will gradually go up in your estimation because I've seen the film many, many times and I adore it. I'm going to give it a 9, but that still gives us an overall, skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
Beautiful. I don't know how I'm going to top this because we've had some bloody good rewatches recently. But on our next episode, we will be reviewing as our main film Jurassic Park 2 or Jurassic World 2, I think it's called now. Is it called The Lost World
Something
or
Fallen Kingdom?
Gives a shit.
And at this, that's exactly what I needed from Ben. So let's be honest, we're not that thrilled. So the only way we can kind of make the episode strong is by having a good rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we need to basically ask John Carpenter for his help. We also need to ask Dad for his help. Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh my God! Yes. You went there!
It's now time for our brand new game show, but this time round it's Ben versus Gemma. The game show is Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's a great name. The concept of the game is quite simple. If you've listened to the last episode and saw me only just slightly lose to Gemma, it was close.
It's like a landslide, really.
We'll take it in turns, so it's not competing as a team, it's one against one. Now, what I'll do is I'll pick a film, for example, The Green Mile. and each player will take a turn to pick a actor or actress from the film, a member of the cast, as some would say. And what we're looking for, what we're looking for, is to score the point. They have to pick the person lowest in order of credit in the list of the film.
Mm-hmm.
We use IMDb for this, so it's consistent throughout all three rounds. It's that simple. The lower down the rating, you should hopefully get the point. It's tough. I will say that from first-hand experience, but let's get straight to it. What I want to do at this point is make it fair. So, Ben, Gemma, which of you would like to go first?
As the gent that I am, Gemma, I'm happy for you to go first.
I was going to say, as the gent that I am, I'm happy for you to go first.
Fine, I'll go first then. Thank you.
No, go on, I will.
Go on, okay.
The offer's there.
I love how already they're
competitive. Go on, Coach.
Gemma, you want to go first?
I guess.
The first film that I'll be picking for you both to choose from is The Departed.
Ooh. Okay. This is very tough, and my mind has completely gone blank. So I'm going to go with Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg. Thank you for your input on this round.
You're welcome.
Ben, can you think of someone lower on the scale of credibility in this
credibility?
Film?
Credibility?
Credits. Credits.
You were doing so well.
Yes.
James Badge Dale.
Fuck.
Guess who won this point?
It's not me, is it?
It's Ben. Good start, Ben. Well done.
How far lower was he? I imagine quite a way. Don't count them, just, you know. Just...
About 10, which is not too bad. I think some of the ones last week were even worse. So, Ben, you'll be picking first. And I think, okay. I'm not just saying this to, like, make you look better than Gemma. Or Gemma look better than Ben. Whoever goes first, it's harder. So then, okay. It was harder for Gemma because you've got more time to think.
Yeah, you're setting the bar. Yeah, it is harder.
The spotlight is directly on you.
Perfect. So, Ben, your film will be X-Men 2.
I'm going to go with Alan Cumming.
Now, Gemma, can you think of someone lower than Alan Cumming?
Okay. This is a guess because I can't remember if he's in the second one or not. So it's a big risk. I'm a risky kind of gal. Ray Parks.
Unfortunately, he's not in it, but I love the bravery. So, Ben, 2-0 up at this point.
This is tough, man. I've
got
sweat on.
That's really hard.
Now you know what it was like last week. And remember, at this point last week, Gemma was 2-0 up, and I still didn't win. Right, this is going to get a bit more interesting. So, your third film,
okay.
Police Academy 3.
What the fuck?
Oh, Christ.
I have no idea. Kim Cattrall.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to go with Bobcat Goldthwait.
Ben gets the point again. What's a good point as well is I didn't pick the first one because Bob isn't in that one.
Yeah.
Free.
Is Kim Cattrall in the third one?
Nope.
No, I don't think so.
Don't worry. You're not going to lose any respect for not knowing your Police Academy characters from the third one.
I'll be honest. I've watched the first one and that is it. I'll tell you what,
if you tell me on this spot right now the title of Police Academy 3, you automatically win the whole game show and Ben loses all points.
I'll stand by that. I'm happy with that.
I don't know. I've never watched.
What would you call it? Police Academy 3.
Back to the Academy. I don't know.
Oh, back in training.
Oh, so close.
She nearly won it. Are you ready, Ben, for the fourth film?
Yes.
We're going to make it a bit easier now because that was a bit tough.
Mm-hmm.
Old School.
Oh.
What a great comedy.
It's so good.
That's something I'd love to do as a rewatch.
Definitely, but I cannot remember anybody who's in it now.
Jeremy Piven.
Okay, so your choice is Jeremy Piven.
Oh, man.
Gemma, someone lower down the ranking than Jeremy Piven.
I'm feeling the pressure. I'm not going to lie. Okay. Snoop Dogg.
She's got a point.
Well done, Pooh. Oh! Great shout.
I just remembered. Snoop-a-loop.
Be honest, how much do you now want to watch that film?
Yeah,
very much so.
We're going streaking. Break the tag.
So at the moment, guys, it's 3-1. So that's quite good. I think at this point last time it was 3-1.
Yeah.
Carbon copy. We're sticking with the comedies here. So Gemma, are you ready?
Ready.
Grown Ups. Another great comedy.
Fucking hell. Oh, Jesus. Who's in Grown Ups?
Who isn't?
Exactly. Oh, God.
I can hear Ben's brain rattling.
David Spade?
So your choice is David Spade.
So my choice is going to be right near David Spade. It's whether it's slightly above or slightly below. I'm going with Rob Schneider.
One belower.
So
one belower?
So I got the point.
You got the point.
Oh.
That's tough.
That was really hard.
By the way, if any of you had said Kevin James, you would have won automatically.
that's not his real name. It's President Paul Blart Mall Cop.
We're at the halfway point and it's 4-1. Right then, number six. Now it's going to be tough.
Like it hasn't been tough.
The Room.
You bastard.
Oh, God. That's so hard.
I want to cry.
Oh, shit. I'm going to go with Philip Haldeman.
Wow.
Very nice choice.
Okay. I'm going to go, and I really hope I remember this as a name, Robin Paris.
Well done. You've got the point.
Yeah. Yes!
Four below.
Well done, wow. Pooch.
Can we, for the listener out there, say that's Denny, who's Phil,
yeah.
And Robin is Michelle. 4-2.
Christ.
Oh.
So it's choice number seven. It's over to you, Pooch.
Okay.
The film is Spider-Man 3.
Okay.
Before you say, I'm just going to say, it's 10 years old, that film.
It is.
Really?
That's mental.
10 years since Emo Peter.
That's the one.
10 years is a long time ago, so I'm going to go with somebody I remember from 10 years ago. Topher Grace.
So, Ben.
I'm going to go with Bryce Dallas Howard.
One below. Oh! You get the points.
Oh, no.
Well done, guys. That was bloody
good
going.
Yeah.
Do you realise as well
yeah.
that Franco's in that film? I always forget.
Yeah.
Fuck, he is, isn't he?
He's in all three of them, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. And Sandman. Most underrated acting performance of all time.
Jesus.
Right then, Ben, it's over to you. And the film this time round is The Expendables 2.
Oh, shit. I've never seen this.
You can guess, though, dude. You will know. Hell. Pick anyone. There it is.
Eric Roberts.
Okay, and your choice?
Like Ben, I've never seen it before. I'm going to go Sylvester Stallone.
The biggest name character. But it does get you the point.
Okay, no worries.
Was Terry Crews in it?
Oh, bollocks, he was, wasn't he? He was in one of them.
Yes.
I should have said Terry Crews. Fuck.
Damn it.
What's Terry Crews been in recently?
We Brooklyn talked about. Nine-Nine.
There you go.
I love Terry Crews.
He's awesome.
Hmm. Can he be our uncle or some? Can he be some kind of the Skeksis family?
Yeah, he's our uncle for sure. Uncle Terry.
Uncle Terry.
Uncle Tezza.
Yeah. Oh, Tezza.
What are the scores on the doors, Mark?
5-3. I think I should do a little drum roll, you know, like George Dawes. Right then, two more to go, and I've gone for some big ones here.
Uh-oh.
So it's Gemma's choice?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
it's hard to keep track, isn't it? There's only two of us. Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Ooh, Lupita Nyong'o.
Okay, thank you for your suggestion.
You're more than welcome.
I think this one will be close. I'm going to go with Gwendolyn Christie.
Ben takes the point.
Oh,
how close to Lola.
Man alive, we've been really close with our answers.
This has been good, hasn't it?
It has.
I'm really impressed with that, guys. Yeah. Really impressed. We're going to play the final one. Ben has won 6-3.
Well,
but let's
go
for the last one as well, just for pride.
The potential tiebreaker.
No, it's just the 10th one.
Oh, right.
No,
yeah.
You've already won, dude.
Have we got a tiebreaker as well?
We have.
We'll do that one as well, then.
Cool. Well, let's just keep playing all night. The 10th choice is quite an epic film.
Okay.
I think Ben's personal favourite of all time, Justice League.
Oy vey. I'm going to go with Scoot McNairy.
I think you probably won this one. I was going to go for Amber Heard.
About 15 places above Ben's choice. So massive well done,
Woo.
Ben. You've absolutely... A bit more... Come on, you've just won again. Not an insult. 7-3. Do you want the tiebreaker?
Yeah.
The tiebreaker is... And who's going to go? Gemma first?
I'll go first.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2,
Ooh.
Which Ben recently watched again.
I did, yeah.
And you liked it.
I did, I liked it a hell of a lot more second time.
Okay. Miley Cyrus.
Okay.
I think I'm going to get his name wrong, but I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to say Michael Nussbaum.
So I found a character called Michael Rosenbaum.
That's it.
Oh!
I knew I'd get it wrong.
Gets the point.
Yay. Shit.
But overall,
I'm
not giving her a point. What am I giving
her
a point here for?
I won.
Fuck
Ben won 7-3.
Well done, mate.
So I'm just working out next week. Is there anything to play for? It'd just be an equal draw. You need to beat me just to show your power. Because I lost the first one, so Gemma's got one.
Yeah.
You've got one.
Yeah.
I could just, if I beat you, I get one, and it's all fair. That's boring.
No, we could win.
You
want to
annihilate me. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Time for Skip to the Recommend, that point of the show where we give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. I'm going to throw it to you, Pooch, first of all. What are you enjoying this week?
Okay, I don't think you're going to like this. It's a musical theatre show.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, I wonder what that is. Is it named after a Formula One driver?
So my Skip to Recommend this week... is Hamilton, oh. An American musical, which is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it tells the story of the life of American founding father Alexander Hamilton through song and rap.
Can I just pause you there?
Of course you can.
Mark, did you honestly think it was about Lewis Hamilton?
I'm taking the piss.
I always have to check with you.
He did look slightly deflated.
It's because like, you didn't laugh at my joke.
That's easy to do.
Fuck you.
So, I booked these tickets a good year and a half ago, and I was familiar with the soundtrack, and Lin-Manuel Miranda has done a really great story crafting about this story, but using, like I said, using song and rap and spoken word to try and relate it to people. So I am very aware that these tickets are like gold dust.
Yeah.
You know, they go out on sale, they sell out within minutes. So there was a lot riding on this. I was thinking this better deliver because it's been a bloody long time since I purchased them. My God, it is easily one of the best things I've ever seen on the stage. Everything about this is just perfect. And the story is joyful, it's hilarious, and it's also gut-wrenchingly sad. But to Miranda's credit, when you're passionate about something and you want to show this in a medium where you want to exude that passion onto others, it works. And this is exactly the best example of this happening. And he achieves it perfectly. Ash Hunter was the lead role of Alexander Hamilton, and he was outstanding. He was really, really great, really powerful, really commanded the stage. But some of my favourites was Michael Gibson as King George. He provided very much the comic relief of the story, which was needed in some places. Cleve September as John Lawrence and Philip Hamilton, who completely broke my heart in many ways. And Rachel Ann Goh as Eliza Schuyler, who exudes a loving presence and soul-crushing pain. If you're a bit of a sentimental fool like myself... Go and have a check out of the soundtrack. There's also a mixtape where artists such as Busta Rhymes, I believe Common, have done some songs, some remix versions of this. But you'll be astounded by this.
Do you think they'll do a movie of it?
Yes, yeah, hands down. Within 5 years, there'll be an announcement.
Yeah, definitely. I'd have thought so.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, if you're a big fan, you like what you hear, go and get tickets. I was thinking, good luck to that.
Yeah, if you have tickets, you're in for a real treat. But if not, I'm sure our chuckload are going to be announced very, very soon. And the soundtrack's available too.
It's insanely popular. It cleaned up at the Tonys, I think, in last year or the year before. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was the Book of Mormon set a load of Tony records a few years back, and then Hamilton just shat all over the records.
Yeah. As soon as the show was over, everybody was on their feet straight away, giving the cast a standing ovation. And I hated doing that thing, you know, when you see, like, I don't know, like Family Guy, when Peter stands up and he's applauding and crying at the same time. And I thought, Jesus, who'd do that? I did that. I was in freaking tears. But it was amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. And anyone who is going to be watching it, you will too.
You cry at everything, though. You cried at Deadpool, didn't you?
No.
I was crying at shite.
Is that, you sure that was Mark?
You were crying recently. What was it in the cinema? A couple of reviews ago.
Oh, Jesus.
The Quiet Place, you cried a few times.
Did I?
Yeah.
Don't remember that.
Huh. No. You cry, I don't know, you cry.
I'm a hard bastard.
Avengers, you definitely cry.
Yes. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I was sobbing like a baby.
Yes, a lot of tears were produced.
Mark, what's your pick?
Mine's an art book.
Ooh.
And it's called Ghoulish by Gary Poulin. And I've been seeing loads of DVDs and Blu-rays coming out from Arrow, you know, the horror makers that we're big friends of.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing these distinctive artwork pieces, and I kept seeing his name, so I was like, I need to invest in this book, because I just kept seeing these iconic posters. So I brought the book with me, as always, guys, for you guys to look at. And I just noticed that when we do recommendations, people do actually listen to us and sometimes go out and buy stuff.
They do.
So one of my favourite pictures, which I wanted to bring and show you today, I've wrote down in the number so I can show you, is you probably saw the recent release for The Thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His design there is unbelievable. That's so cool, I think it's absolutely amazing.
It's gorgeous.
Gemma, I'm going to pass it to you.
Okay.
There's a design in here that I think you're going to absolutely love.
Okay. Oh, 87.
So you can see there the Big Lebowski. Now turn the page over and see the finished product. Ben's going to be blown away as well. Look at
that's
that.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's so cool.
Bowling balls for boobs.
That's beautiful. He's got such a distinctive style. Now pass it to Ben. Final one. This film, I'm not sure if you even love, Ben, but I think you're going to love the poster. Page 126.
Is it Bridges of Madison County?
How cool is that?
The Hitcher?
Yes.
That's very cool, yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen the film, but it's a very cool poster.
Look at that. I thought straight away it's your style. It's kind of the colours and everything.
And I love the alien one next to it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what's interesting, Gemma? Have you noticed that whenever Mark brings a book, it's always a picture book? it's never a book with words.
No. There's
you
about
got me.
Three words.
You got me. But he's a great artist. It was £20 on Amazon. It's only just come out. Look at the cover, man.
That's
Teen Wolf.
That's gorgeous.
I love it.
But they're nice coffee book tables. And you are right, Ben. I don't read.
Coffee book tables? Coffee table books?
Coffee table books. From Argos.
Coffee
tables. I might just bring like the Bible one week and pretend I read.
I was expecting like pop-ups.
Yeah, that'd be the next book. But it's a great investment. Like I said, I've bought it for £20 and there's so many iconic images in there that you can see. Even if you don't like the film, the artwork's great. Like I said with the Mondo, you want to cut them all out and put them on your wall because they look great framed.
Yeah.
Big time.
A good investment there. Ben?
And my pick this week is a short animated fantasy series called Over the Garden Wall. Now, this was created by a chap called Patrick McHale in 2014, and it was originally broadcast on Cartoon Network, but in recent weeks it's become available on UK Netflix.
Ah.
So all of you out there in this country with Netflix, get on it. It's the story of two brothers called Wirt and Greg who get lost in a mysterious forest and encounter all manner of weird characters as they attempt to find their way back home, all the time staying ahead of the Beast, who is hunting them down. And the characters are wonderful. So the older brother, Wirt, he's introspective and cautious, a bit of a nebbish. And then his younger brother, Greg, is brave and adventurous. And the relationship between the two of them is an absolute delight. It's a really funny show. It's sweet, it's imaginative, it's charming. And it has a really surprising ending that you will not see coming. Now, Mark, to put your mind at rest, there are only 10 episodes and they're only 11 minutes.
11 minutes?
Exactly.
I knew you were going to do that.
110 minutes. It's basically like watching one movie.
Wow. Yeah?
So it's not so bad, is it?
That's really short.
Yeah. If you like Studio Ghibli films,
love.
And if you like the TV show Adventure Time, you will love this because it's kind of like a hybrid of the two things. It also involves some great voice work. It includes people like Elijah Wood, Melanie Lynskey, and Christopher Lloyd.
Wow.
Or Doc Brown himself. In 2015, it won an Emmy as the most outstanding animated program, and it's currently at number 44 on IMDb's list of the best TV shows of all time.
I need this in my life.
How have I never even heard of it?
I
lived under a rock.
Well, no, it's because, you know, how often do you watch Cartoon Network? Never,
yeah,
I imagine.
True.
So why would you have seen it? But now it's on Netflix. Watch it. You will love it. Gemma, especially you. There's no way you won't love this.
I can't wait. I'm going to do this tonight.
Yeah. Look at her face.
Yeah. Look at her little face. Her little face there, all lit up.
For the listeners out there, she looks very smiley.
I do, like a chipmunk.
Like she's just gushed.
Oh dear.
That turned dark anyway, very quickly.
That's about to ruin it.
Turn the atmosphere rather sour. Let's
sure,
go to
save me, social media.
Let's
save
go to
me.
Social media. On Facebook, Kevin Tasker has said, the new DJ Jazzy Jeff album, M3, is superb. Real Instruments Hip Hop, with Rhymefest, Dane Jordan and Jeff's own son taking the MC duties and working as a trio, like they've been together for years. It's a breath of fresh air in the mumble rap world we live in.
Oh, yes. Rhymefest is pretty cool too.
I had no idea Jazzy Jeff was still alive,
let
alone making music.
He's wow.
Still kicking, but I'm down for that.
Get involved with that. Mm. On Twitter, Patricia Grundy at Patsy Poo Makes. She said, I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, about the East Area rapist who was caught last month after over 30 years on the loose. A fantastic but terrifying book. Reading it at night made me very, very jumpy.
It's an amazing book. And yeah, this is one of the books where I like true crime. I love true crime podcasts. And so I've only just started delving into true crime books.
Yeah.
This one, By a Country Mile, is the one that has kept me awake at night. It is so vivid, but there's so much emphasis on the victims as opposed to, you know, creating this backstory for the East Area rapist.
Yeah.
Who is a fucking dick. And I'm so glad he's been caught and he's going down for the rest of his fucking life.
Good, good. I bought the book the other day, actually. I'm really looking forward to reading it. It's written by Michelle McNamara, who is Patton Oswalt's late wife. She
Very
died.
True.
What I think the book wasn't complete. I think he helped, or he and her editor perhaps helped finish off the book. And not long after she died, well, about a year or so, they caught the guy. And even though the police are denying it, they've only really managed to get the guy because of the stuff that she dug up when making the book. So she's a large part
That's
of him
great.
Being caught.
Yeah.
On Twitter, Jaws19 at Jaws19 Show has said, the marvellous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime, set in 1950s New York, about a female stand-up comedian. Crackling dialogue, beautiful period detail, like Mad Men with jokes.
Period detail.
Not that kind
No.
I
keep seeing this on my Amazon list, and I always keep skipping past it.
I've not watched it. It won a few Golden Globes, I think, in its first season. I think it's created by the woman who created... I want to say Golden Girls, but that's not it. What's that show about women who just keep talking? Summit Girls.
Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Which is, it's one of the worst shows of all time. So
I've watched it.
I've seen a bit of Gilmore Girls, yeah.
Never seen it.
Shouldn't have to.
Let me get you Lent on the remote and it just started. Yeah, that
old three episodes later.
I will fully admit I purposely chose to watch it to see what the fuss was all about and I hated every second of it. But it wasn't made for me. I'm not the target audience. But anyway, Marvellous Mrs. Maisel is meant to be quite good.
Thank you, Jaws 19.
20-word movie reviews at 20-word MR. Went to see Game of Thrones live in concert in Belfast last night. Was absolutely breathtaking. Not just the awesome music, but the actual stage production and little bits of entertainment they put on made it an amazing overall experience. Highly recommended.
Ooh.
I'm jealous, I'll be honest. That would be outstanding.
Yeah, and they've been doing this around the world. Last year, they did a show of it in Los Angeles. And as a surprise performance, Serj Tankian from System of a Down appeared on stage. Wow. And he sang the song Reigns of Castamere. Go on YouTube and search for Game of Thrones, Serj Tankian, Reigns of Castamere. It's amazing. Like, gives you goosebumps.
Cool.
Phenomenal.
Wow.
On Instagram, Callum, a.k.a. cbro.22, has said, somehow, I've only just got around to seeing Sexy Beast. Was expecting a typical British gangster film, but was pleasantly surprised. It's pretty trippy in parts, and Ben Kingsley is insanely good in it.
Yes, 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 yes.
Did we do that as a rewatch? We've certainly talked about it.
We talked about it. We had a top three gangster movies, and we both picked it.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't seen it.
And it is on my rewatch list.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Oh, dude.
Don't worry, I'm going to bring it back as a rewatch. It's on my list.
Excellent. On Twitter, Arda Zorbi Kochak at Zorda Kochak has said, shirtless bear fighter from Image Comics. As the title suggests, it's a lumberjack who fights bears in no clothing.
Sold. Ordering it. Getting the whole lot now.
He said it's hilarious and awesome. I've seen this around. I've seen it in comic book shops and so on, and I've just never pulled the trigger and bought it. But now I've had a recommendation. I'm just definitely going to get hold of that.
I just have this vision of a hairy Viggo Mortensen in a Turkish bath.
That's the film version. They've got to do it. They've got to make it. Shirtless bear fighter, directed by David Cronenberg, starring Viggo Mortensen.
I love how our social media will say, oh God, this episode's cost me so much money. You have no idea that it's the reverse effect. You've just read out five or six, and already you're buying a couple, I'm buying a couple.
Yeah.
It works. We're skint as well now.
Exactly.
Always. Yeah. Again on Twitter, Paul Gifford at pgif12 said, the Orphan X books by Greg Hurwitz, the best action / thriller series I've ever read. Evan Smoke makes Jack Reacher look like a pussy.
Whoa.
Ooh, big words, big words.
Not seen it, not read it, but I've heard good things.
Yes, I'm not familiar, but I'll give them a go. Scott Tucker at S77Tux, if you like your music supergroups with a political edge, may I suggest Prophets of Rage's self-titled album. Comprised of members from Rage Against the Machine, Public Enemy and Cypress Hill, it pulls no punches. We've seen them live, haven't
we? Been there, seen them.
Yeah.
We saw them at Download last year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were good, actually.
Yeah, they put on a good show.
Yeah. To hear stuff like Guerrilla Radio again and Killing the Name, unbelievable.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that was good fun. And then finally on Instagram, Master Debaters Podcast at _MasterDebaters have said, I watched Evil Genius last night, tremendous Netflix series. I thought you were going to bring this as your skips and recommend, Mark.
I did too.
I like to surprise sometimes. It was probably my second choice, but I saw that you haven't seen it, have you?
Not yet, no.
There's no point in me talking about it because there's moments that would ruin it.
You don't want to spoil it for me.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I appreciate
to you.
That, mate. I appreciate it.
It's definitely worth the watch.
He was dead the whole time. What? I love these recommendations.
I know, an absolute fantastic bunch again. And you can please give us some more on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or you can email us oldschoolstylypodcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I really want a Solero.
Oh, don't
I'm
I?
So hot, I want a Solero bad.
I want a Twister, you know, the green and white one.
Oh,
they're really nice.
They're pretty good.
Mr. Whippy all the way.
Oh.
Mr. Whippy, what are you going to get a Mr. Whippy from? If we start mentioning stuff that you can go out and buy in supermarkets...
someone might listen.
What, you have a van to turn up to your house next week?
They might...
I'd love that.
They might post it, you know.
You're an idiot.
Post it?
Oh, God. Waste.
What's she on about?
What you really mean is you want a Magnum.
Yeah.
Yes, that's expensive.
Magnum.
Fine, I'll have a Magnum.
Sounds good to me.
It's hot though, isn't it?
Yeah. Listen to Ben's energy levels.
I'm sad.
Thanks again for another episode of Skip to the End.
See you in two weeks.
Whatever. But on the next episode, our main review is...
That's too exciting.
Jurassic World 2. Which it is. And at the moment, our expectations are low.
Very.
And look what happened with Solo.
Indeed.
Well,
you never
know.
Indeed.
Gemma, what is our topic?
We're going to be discussing our top three dystopian movies.
Not much to choose from there.
Only two or three.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Shall we have a bit of a moratorium where there are certain films we can't pick? So I'm going to say it now. I will not pick Blade Runner.
Okay.
Because it's too bloody obvious.
Okay, I will not pick Mac and Me. I promise. I won't. I promise.
That's not dystopian. That's utopian. That's how I want the future to be, Mac
that's
and Me.
That's what you want.
Yeah, let's just say no Blade Runner talk. And we'll see. We'll see what else we can... It's more hitting getting you, because I can't even use the thing, can I?
It's open range.
Speaking of thing, next episode is going to be Dadcast. It's going to be Kurtcast. So, Mark, what is our rewatch?
Big Trouble in Little China, baby.
Oh, my Lord. I can't wait to discuss that. And we're also going to be doing Kurt Russell for Movie Masturbate.
Kurtcast, I'm happy with, honestly. I'm well happy with that.
It's going to be amazing. We're going to give away a load of Corey Feldman related prizes.
We are.
And we'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week and all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. See you in 2 weeks. It's a lie, a kiss with open eyes, and she's not free.